button and we'll be good to go. Let me know when you hit it.
It's recording. It's 3 seconds, 4 seconds.
Okay, cool, 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 cool. Recording. Guys, thank you so much for coming back and listening to Parishioners Podcast. Really appreciate you guys coming back week after week. And we have a pretty fun episode coming up for you, I think. I'm here with my buddy, so I've been excited.
Hey, everybody.
Excited all day to do this. So Kevin Lyons is here, returning as my co-host.
How's it going?
And our guest today is Doc Willis.
Doc in the building. Get it.
Kevin, Doc and I have known each other. How long have we known each other? Like, since we pretty much started.
When you started at the Ha Ha, so you talking. Yeah. How long have you been doing comedy now? About 6, 7 years? 9 years. So, yeah, got to be at least 9.
Yeah,
I met you at the Ha Ha originally. Right. You know,
so I ended up being like a door guy at the Ha Ha. He ended up being a door guy at the Comedy Store, and then we like wouldn't see each other forever. But I like we would keep in touch when you come back. You know, you do the Ha Ha mic sometimes or something. Rarely when I got to have a day off to go to the Comedy Store.
Yeah,
and then
that's rarely. Like it was so hard working there and trying to get stage time. It was like God.
It's so weird. So like we all think like, yeah, we'll work at the club and we'll get so much stage time, but it like prevents you.
But you couldn't even go out to other clubs to get on.
Exactly, you're just stuck in that one.
But the greatest thing is like being there and the other headliners coming through, and then you get your opportunities with them. But it's like, if not one guy just grabs onto you and give it to you consistently, you don't get the time that you really want. And it's like, oh man.
And then when you're going up in the club where you work at, there's kind of this. What's the word for it? Like, you're really self-conscious about going on stage.
Yeah.
Because you work there.
Yeah.
And you know, at the comedy store, you would go on stage with your Comedy Store t-shirt on. Everyone knows you work there. You sat them, you whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, because if it was any other club, you could just get on stage. Well, and if I'm bad, then I won't get to play again. But now it's just like, if I'm bad, I might get fired.
Well, no, you know what, though? Like, I was fortunate to be there when right before the mother. Misty Shore, who was Pauly Shore's mother, pulled out. So, like, it was expected. Like when we had our time was dedicated for the employee spots. It's like the people who came to that show and watched us perform those 2 nights a week, they knew that we was employees. So it wasn't no real pressure.
I mean, every comic started that way. I mean, all these great comics started that way.
It was pressure when she came in to watch us.
Right.
Man, it was like,
well, for me, going up when you're working and you did the door, and then you had to go do a spot, and they'd be like, go do the spot. So yeah, I would almost talk myself out of doing it sometimes because I felt kind of bad.
Oh, I did that for years.
Right?
Yeah, because.
And then when you go up, you are never going to grow as a comedian. Not never, but I never felt comfortable to work on new shit.
Yeah.
Because you had to prove. Yeah. Even harder that you were funny, because everyone probably is assuming, or at least in your mind, you think everyone is assuming that you're not funny because you work there.
Yeah.
So when they see all these really funny guys and you go on the stage, you have to go, I have to prove I'm funny. So you drop your A game every set, and then you'll never work on new shit.
Well, that's the struggle of trying. That's where you have to separate yourself from, like, do I want to please these dumbasses, or do I want to do what I got to do to be who I want to be?
Yeah,
and it's that struggle, because I don't mean to call them the dumbasses, but it's like the people who judge you, a lot of them hold the key to where you want to go, and you face with this dilemma. Well, if I don't do well in front of them, they're going to think I'm not shit. But then if I keep just killing with the same stuff, they're gonna be like, oh, he's not growing.
Yeah.
So you're in a double win. It's like
Exactly, man.
And I can see it, because you wouldn't even try out new stuff at that club because you wouldn't want them to see your new stuff, but you don't have the opportunity
to go other to places, go to another place, like these little bar rooms, and try out something new.
It's like,
it's like
Catch 22. You know what I mean?
But then, like, these big guys, they go out and they work shit out, and then they'll come back and be like, damn, that guy's a beast. But every week, something new.
But I swear to God. But the Ha Ha, I don't know if they were. How do you guys do it like that? But Missy did it. Like, for me personally, I didn't have a problem with working on new stuff in front of her or in front of anybody. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
When I went up, it was just my fear of myself not doing well.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't really care about what they thought. The other people,
that's
care
a good way
to a degree.
Be, man. Yeah, I figured that out way too late.
But even then, though, it's even worse because I was too critical on myself.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, you have to be. That's a good trait, though. You should always be your worst critic.
Almost better than the opposite. Not caring how you perform.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Doc, I'm glad that, like, we started becoming more close because right when we both left those jobs, because like I left the Haha and I started seeing you a lot more because I was free to come to the Comedy Store, and then all of a sudden you left the Comedy Store and I was just like kind of sad because it's nice to see you there, and you just know that, like, you got a buddy that works there, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And then at the same time I'm like, fucking good for him, dude.
Well, you know what's great too, man, just to the fact that two people can see funniness in each other and not be because of who they with or who, you know, what I'm saying? Like, there's a genuine, like, hey man, like, Doc's funny, I'm funny, let's kick it. We you say, Doc, come do this show. And I'm like, yeah, let's do it.
With no ulterior motives. Yeah, I mean, it's just good personality.
Yeah, it's not like Augustino's never been like the type of dude that had me thinking like, oh yeah, well, he just asking me because I know these people. I work at the store, so he's just trying to get close. So Augustino always been like, you to me, I like people like that. I like people instead of those people that just give you spots because you're a nice guy.
Uh-huh.
That I hate.
No.
Yeah, like, I'll take them.
I'll take them, but I'm just saying.
But you want the spot because you're funny and they want you.
Yeah, because what happens is it tapers off. And that was the main reason why I quit working at the Comedy Store. It was like a struggle seeing people
passing
get
you
opportunities and passing me in. But the best thing about that, working there, and you'll attest to this, is working at the Haha, you see it on so many levels where people just, they be failing miserably, just horribly failing. And then all of a sudden, those people just all of a sudden become good and pass the other people. So this game is, it's that unpredictable.
It is, because you'll be working, you'll be following the rules or have yourself a good path, and like, I'm working hard, I'm getting a little bit more stage time, and then somebody else who hasn't been doing it as long, all of a sudden they just get right to the top, and it's just like, it sucks because you don't want to feel bad for people who are, you never want to feel bad, like, be angry at somebody for making it, but at the same time, when you feel like you're hard work.
Yeah, well, you work hard, and you realize that, what I realize is that it's not just about being funny. Mm-hmm. You know, comedy is about being funny, but the business aspect of it is more than that. Oh, and people don't understand that.
Of course.
They'll, you know, you'll go to clubs and people will say, well, you were funnier than him. Why you don't have, or this person is funnier than that person. Why they don't have, mm-hmm. And you're like, because it's always something else. It's some people are just assholes out there in the streets.
I've done shows where I open it after the audience is like, you were funny the headliner. How come you're not headlining? I'm just like, you've been doing it 30 years and you just got to fucking be respectful. That's fucking cool.
When I would do shows and my friends would come, and this is something that would bother me, is after the show, they would say, oh, you were so much funnier than that guy. You were so much funnier. Yeah. I'm like, first of all, don't say that out loud because you don't know who these other people know. But second, it's not about being funnier than the other person. I mean, for me, when I was doing it, it was about just getting along with comics and making a room full of people laugh. Like, that's like...
Exactly.
A nice guy.
Yeah,
a nice guy. Well, listen. Kevin's right. No, because Kevin's right. If we were... we are artists, but if we were literally painters and we had an art festival, and Kevin and I both invited his friends, I invited my friends, and like his friends showed up, and afterwards they're like, Kevin, your paintings were so much better than Augustino's paintings. Like, it's not about that.
Yeah.
He has good paintings, and I have good paintings, but they're completely different paintings.
Yes,
exactly. Mine's my art, and his is his art. You know?
When I look at them, I don't like it because it's just uncomfortable. A lot of times they had a problem with the headliner.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually that person that approach you and say, oh,
yeah,
this guy, you were funnier than this guy. It's like, you got into it with him in the show, and he didn't like you. Now you're saying I'm better than him.
Yeah,
but we know, you know, but for me personally.
Too, yeah. Comedy politics.
Yeah. I'm always like, hey, thanks for saying that, but keep it down. I want him to keep booking me. He finds out I'm funnier than him, he's going to stop booking me.
I know where my place is. Like, I kind of look at myself in a full honest position. And that's why I left the Comedy Store. Because I said, man, what am I doing?
Yeah.
You know, I'm featuring and I'm hosting for guys, and I got a little TV credit here and there, and I said, but I'm nothing in this whole scheme of things as far as me moving forward where I want to do. So I said, I got to cut that off and just go for it.
Yeah.
So that's where I am in my position, is just really just trying to go for it instead of like it's cool, and I'm really thankful that people will take you out, but at the same time, it's like, man, you got to find your lane to get yourself out there.
You do need to know your place.
Yeah, man, so I'm cool with that.
And I'm glad that, like, we got booked. We did the La Jolla Comic Store together. You got booked that same week that I was there.
And that was a great show.
And we shared the... Yeah, it was Darren Carter was the headliner, and then like him and I were the openers. We got booked at, and we all shared the condo. So it was really cool to reconnect with you, and we were like, oh, let's get numbers again, and I've been touched ever since. So I'm really thankful for that. We got to get this podcast started. That's a fucking long-ass intro. But I mean, I love it.
That was the intro?
That was the intro. We're just keeping it real. We have a new sponsor, Kev.
Oh, so, we do?
This episode is brought to you by BenefitPackages.com. Listen, I'll explain to you guys what Benefit Packages is. It's an agency to help you get health insurance. I can't break it down to you any more simpler than that.
Well, I don't have health insurance.
Exactly. I can't tell you how often I hear people that go, I don't have health insurance. Because I know I've been there. I've been one of those guys where it's like, I don't even know where to begin to get it. I don't know if I can afford it. I don't know. You know what I mean? You don't even know where to sign up. And then you won't even go to the doctor, especially
it's
comics.
It's on the internet. It's like people don't even
tell. And a lot of young comics... I got insurance.
I'll just die 30 years early. It's okay. I don't want to go. That's too much hassle. I have video games to play.
Insurance does not have to be that complicated because there's benefitpackages.com. Go to benefitpackages.com or I'll do you one better. Call this number, 1-800-356-3615, and you're going to talk to a person. You're not going to talk to a machine. You're going to answer questions. You're not going to press 1 to whatever. No, you're going to talk to an actual person, and they are going to walk you through taking the steps to get health insurance. It does not be that difficult. And guess what, Kevin?
Yes.
They work for free.
That's awesome.
Going to charge you anything because a lot of people don't know this. They think, oh, I need help, but I can't afford to hire an agent. No, the agents work for the companies. For example, Anthem Blue Cross – Blue Shield.
Oh, okay.
They are compensating the agents for signing you up.
Oh, wow.
So you have free someone basically a lawyer for your health insurance representing you for free.
I wish I would have known that.
So go to benefitpackages.com or call that number. Once again, it's 1-800-356-3615. And it does not have to be that complicated. It is not open enrollment right now, but a lot of people don't know this either. There are reasons that you can get health insurance if it's not open enrollment, like if you lost your job, if you had an income change, if you recently moved. So if you guys are in the California state, reach out to Benefit Packages, and you're going to tell them that I sent you, Parishioners Podcast sent you. And guess what? If you tell them that Parishioners Podcast sent you, you're going to get your choice of either a free water bottle, which is to go hiking. It's an infused water bottle. You can put fruit in it, and it keeps the fruit cool, and you go hiking with it, and you carry it on. You can clip it onto your bag or whatever. Or you can choose 2 free movie tickets if only – you mentioned Parishioners Podcast. Go hook yourself up with some health insurance. We're here with Kevin Lyons and Doc Willis. What's up, Kevin?
I was about to say, I choose the 2 movie tickets.
Obviously.
I'm going to take the 2 movie tickets.
I was like, maybe I should kill my insurance and then resign.
Yeah. I need to get some insurance really bad, man. Like, yeah. You don't care about health insurance until your teeth start hurting.
Hit them up, bro. Fucking hit them up. They'll tell you. You know what?
You can get hit by a car, have a broken leg. I'm okay. You could get a cut. I'm okay. I'll just sew it up. Your teeth start to hurt. I need dental.
Exactly. That's another thing. You might qualify for free health insurance, or you might qualify for Cover California, aka Obamacare. Yeah. If you're in the California state, depending on your income, whatever it is, they'll help you out and tell you how much it is.
Yeah.
They'll get
All right, cool.
Listen, I got an appointment tomorrow with a chiropractor. It's no bullshit, guys. It's not a part of the ad. My back has been fucking bothering me, dude. And then finally I was like, I don't think my insurance covers that. But I'm like, fuck, I got a PPO. I hit up a chiropractor buddy of mine, and he's like, fuck yeah, your insurance covers that. Come down here, get a massage, I'll line you out. $30 copay.
Oh,
that's all I got to fucking pay.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So you guys are missing out. You might qualify for free. And also, if someone you know, a loved one or a parent or yourself is turning 65 recently, you qualify to go ahead and get Medicare right now. You don't have to wait for open enrollment if it's your birthday.
Cool.
I gave you guys all the information.
Augustino covering people all day long.
All day long. Just call once again.
Insurance people.
Now that you guys got the pen in your hand, it's 1-800-356-3615. Or go to benefitpackages.com. And you're going to mention that the Parishioners Podcast sent you. So we got Doc Willis, Kevin Lyons,
DOC.
Parishioners Podcast.
How's it going?
We're starting right now.
Let's do it.
I'm
going to
get refilled. Actually, I'm
going
to bring the bottle.
You good too? You need a refill?
I'll take a little swig of that. Thanks, buddy. Whiskey, yeah, I love whiskey, man. We do. We have another segment with my production group where we review movies. I call it On the Rocks, where I force them to watch a movie that they would never watch, and then we drink whiskey and we talk about it on the podcast. It's a lot of fun, man. I love doing that stuff. That's the way to go. The truth. The whiskey. I never really got into drinking whiskey until like the last couple of years.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Did you just start drinking, period?
No, I just like. Well, I would have like shots of whiskey, but I've never just preferred just drinking whiskey straight up as a beer.
And we're drinking like, Black Label. That's fucking whiskey. For like the last couple of years. Scotch. We finished our first round of drinks during the intro. That was a fucking long ass intro.
Hey man, that means we're just having a good conversation.
With the topic we had, I was like, no one else, we're gonna be so I was like, it's gonna be perfect.
So Doc, would you say that working at a comic store was the craziest job that you've ever had?
Nah, it's you know, I used to be a bus driver too for a little while.
Now that you mention it, I did know that.
Yeah, but I was only bus driving for like 3 months. And it was crazy. I quit immediately. I said, nah, just saying. It was hindering me as a comedian. And I said to myself, man, I got to do this. But as a bus driver, it's too much chaos, man. Any bus drivers out there, I salute you, man. You know, that's the struggle is real out there. I couldn't take it.
Some guys do that like until they retire.
Yeah. But they love that.
Like a city bus or school bus?
City bus. I used to drive for the city of Santa Monica, California. Oh, like, wow. So, like, it was. And the problem is like, you would think that's a beautiful city.
Yeah.
But that bus go all the way to downtown. Yes. So you pick up, oh, man. I said, what? It's the craziest. The way people do you on a bus, it's insane. It infuriates you.
What do you mean the way they do you on the bus?
What is the craziest thing that you've seen as a bus driver?
I mean, I don't know if to see done to me, just getting cussed out by homeless people.
Yeah, that happens.
Like, I do this on stage, but it's the real story where, like, they knew you would be trained. You know what I'm saying? They knew you were being trained.
Yeah.
So people would fuck with, like, they would try to, oh, you know what, money today. And my trainers would be like, no, that person right there, they do that all the time.
Yeah, watch out.
When you knew, watch out for this person. Pay your money. So, like, one particular guy, he put 11 cents in my box, and then he walked by me. Like it wasn't a big deal, and I stopped him. I go, sir, the bus fare is $1.25. You got to pay up. And he was like, man, fuck you. And I was like, man, what? I said, what? So I just let him go by. I was like, I guess he'd be just riding in because I'm not about to fight him over.
Yeah.
And then what are you supposed to do? 14? Argue with him for an hour while everybody else is waiting to keep going, you know?
No. What happened was he goes to the back. My trainer was so busy flirting with some girl. He wasn't paying attention and shit. Then he looked up and he seen the dude. He go, hey, did that dude just pay you? And I'm like, nah, man, he put 11 cents and then I tried to quote on the fare and then he just walked by me. He's like, he always do that. He always want to pay 11 cents. And he goes, hey, man.
He always wants to pay 11
cents. He just always has 11 cents.
He's got a dime and a penny he drops in there.
Yeah, this dude was fucking. So then he's like, hey, you make sure you pay, motherfucker, next time. And then he was like, fuck y'all and y'all know what time it is and blah, blah, blah. So the guy, there's a point where they call a layover.
Okay.
You drive, and that's when you switch over to go back the direction that you from once came, right?
Okay, yeah.
So the guy fell asleep on the bus. So I'm on the bus. We pull over for the layover. My supervisor or my trainer see him, and he's like, look at him. He see him in the back. He's like, look at him. He drunk, and he done fell asleep. So he's like, hey, get your ass up and get off the bus. So the guy, he wakes up, and he goes, oh, man, what the fuck? You know where I like to get dropped off. Why would you do this? So my trainer was like, because you drunk and you didn't pay. That's why I did it. Now get off the bus and don't get back on this bus unless you got money to pay. So
wait. So his punishment for only paying 11 cents was dropping his ass somewhere far away there where you knew he didn't.
Plus he's drunk. Yeah. is homeless, so it's kind of like you ain't got nowhere to go. Anywhere I drop you off, that's your destination. It's just like, you know what I mean? So then the guy's waiting outside the bus until we get ready because it's like a 10-minute break, right?
Okay.
So we open the door, and the guy tried to get on the bus, and at this time, there's another girl waiting for us. And she tries to get on the bus. He tried to get on the bus before her, and then my trainer yells at him. He goes, "Hey, man, don't you get on this bus?" He said, "You get on this bus, you better pay." He's like, "You better pay the money." He goes, "Oh, man, shit, y'all ain't shit." And then look at the girl, and he said, "Man, you got a dollar?" And she goes, "Yeah, I got one." So then she go on her purse, and she reaches, and she gives him the dollar. So the guy takes the dollar, he gets on the bus, and he puts the money in his pocket. He goes in his other pocket, he starts going through change, and he grabs a dime and a penny, and starts to put 11 cents in the fucking box. And then my trainer goes, "What the fuck? Man, if you don't put a fucking $1.25 in that, put that dollar in there." He goes, "Man, y'all ain't shit." It's like, y'all know all this ain't. This is some bullshit. And then he goes, he puts the change in his pocket. He pulls out a wad of money.
Shut up.
Yes. He fingers through. He grabs a dollar. He puts a dollar in, puts a quarter in, and goes, "Man, fuck y'all. Y'all some bitches." I said, "Man."
Wow.
Yeah, that sounds like every Monday for me.
It's insane. The way, like, but the thing is you can refuse service, but like they were saying, sometimes they were like, "Man, you know, you just gotta know the people." And sometimes,
yeah, bottom line, you're alone on that bus and you can't put your hands on nobody.
No, man, no.
So you're fucked.
No, I got cussed out. I was being trained and was getting cussed out. And I was like, man,
dude was probably like, "I remember a time when it was only 11 cents to take the bus." And he was like, that's all I'm fucking paying.
That's all I'm paying every time I get on this bus.
But that was just one day driving the bus.
That's one day.
One day.
How long was the trainer? How long before the trainer didn't have to drive with you anymore?
2 months. You had to be trained.
Wow, they're in there with you for 2 months. And then you did a month later and then, and then you quit?
I was like, I'm out. I was like, I'm done. This is preposterous. I cannot take another. I just couldn't do it. It was December.
Kevin, you said, it was December what?
It was, matter of fact, actually I quit the next day after training. That's when I quit.
I did something like that, 2 months ago.
I quit. I hit a police car the first day after training. I was,
Jesus.
Yeah, I crashed into
a police
car.
That was
a
drop the mic, I'm out moment. Yeah, that's it, I'm out this job.
Yeah, I was like, fuck it. I hit a car after training. I said, man, I'm out this, man. I couldn't take it.
That reminds me, because I remember when my first year out here, I was doing a lot of background work. And then I just wanted steady work, like a part-time job in between doing background stuff. And I love movies, so I wanted to work at Blockbuster before they all closed down.
Yeah. Dude, I always wanted to work at Blockbuster.
It was so funny, because
I love movies, too.
I love movies.
First job. It's awesome. It's easy.
Okay.
You know. So I walked into Blockbuster, and I go up to the manager behind the counter. I was just like, "Hey, can I have a job application? I'd like to work here." And he's just like so shocked. He's just like, you have to fill that out online." I'm like, "Really?
That happened to me too."
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm here right now. I know it's really weird, but you have to go home and fill it out online and then come back. I'm like, "But I'm right here." And so I went and I did the whole circus. I went and did that, and I went in for I had three different interviews.
Wow.
To work at Blockbuster. Everybody was younger than me on each interview. They try to make it feel like the job was more
stressful.
You mean
the person interviewing you was younger than you?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I got interviewed by three separate managers, and they were all younger than me. And I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
That's so hilarious, because that's the same process for the bus. How is that? It is. It's the same. How the fuck? For Blockbuster? Yeah. That's just insane to me.
But they were building it up in the interviews and the training sessions. Like, the job is extremely difficult. And it's very stressful. And I'm like, I learned everything in 15 minutes. I'm like, it wasn't.
Of course.
Their computer system looked like it was like made in the 1970s. Like, you ever watch Lost? Remember the Dharma Initiative? Those old computers? And so I learned all that today.
Their computer system was like from Ghost. Remember when?
Oh, yeah.
Remember when Carl was like, "The money's gone." Remember that computer? And he would type
Sam,
out like,
"Sam, Sam."
Yeah, it was Sam, Sam, Sam. Sam.
That's exactly what it was like. But anyway, I basically learned everything that you needed to do as like a trainee that first day on the job. And they were training me for like 3 weeks. 3 weeks. I think it was something ridiculous like that. And like I would like I was able to do the computer stuff. Like, oh no, it's okay. You just sort the movies. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But they would keep on training me and training me. And like when they train you, you don't get full pay.
I'm like,
I don't think that's legal anymore.
I was like, fuck this. And so I just stopped going. Like I remember pulling up into Blockbuster, and this is after a couple weeks, I think, because they would give me a couple shifts a week. And I pulled up and I just looked in and I saw the douchebag behind the counter, and I'm just like, fuck this shit. Mm-hmm. I kept the Blockbuster t-shirt. and I left, and they still called me for like 3 or 4 weeks after. It's like, you didn't show up for your shift today. Yeah, I know. I wish I could have grabbed a couple movies. But for weeks, they would be calling me. They're like, you didn't show up for work today. We're going to have to write you up. And like, and it kept on going on.
You should have just stormed out the door with Toy Story 2. Just
I didn't even get inside the building to have a dramatic quitting. I just didn't. I just went there and I'm like, nope. And I just left.
Kevin, was that in Massachusetts?
No, that was here. That was the one in Burbank, right on, was it Glen Oaks? You remember that Blockbuster over there?
It's not on Glen Oaks.
So did you work at the Blockbuster?
Yeah, there was...
No, I never worked at Blockbuster. I wanted to.
No, there was a... I think it was Glen Oaks. It was Glen Oaks, like...
It's like Burbank and something.
I think
there was a different Blockbuster there.
It was there, but they're all closed down now. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, wow. No, dude. You know what happened to me? I have somewhat of a similar story. I got hired at Bloomingdale's. Well, I've always worked retail.
It's funny because you didn't apply to. You just got hired there. They just called you and said you're working here now.
I'll tell you what. That's exactly what fucking happened.
Oh, for real?
I did not apply at Bloomingdale's.
How did you get a job? That's crazy. This guy's psychic. Hey, everybody, I'm about to leave because we got a psychic in the building. I'm a little bit nervous. Hey, this is crazy.
I swear to God. Huh? Listen, I worked retail since I was 18 years old. Since the day I turned 18, I was like, I'm going to go get a job. And I fucking worked retail at the malls. I always did mall jobs. My first job was at Guess, clothing store.
Yeah.
And I worked there the longest, probably like 2 years. And I got really good at selling.
Nice girls in Guess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I still keep in touch with them, actually.
Dude, you little guest creeper, man.
Oh, man.
But I got really good.
The guest store?
I actually got hired, in the stock room. And one day they were super swamped, and they were like, come out and help us on the floor. And then I was just really good at selling, so they kept me as a salesman. I just became a salesman. So I would sell, and then I sold so much, I became like number three seller in the fucking company, like corporate wide. And I got like, I'm like, what do I get? They're like, you get to have a free watch from our brand, and you get to pick it. And I was give me the $600 one. It's the most expensive one you got. And I think I sold it.
Oh, you got it? Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
And then, no, I swear to God, I was working Guess one day, and this woman came in. And she was a little elderly, an elderly black woman, maybe in her late 50s. No. She was super sweet, dressed like Claire Huxtable, coming back from a court of law.
Right.
And then she was like Claire looking Huxtable. At this, looking at that, you know. And I was super helpful. I wasn't selling. The best sellers are ones that don't sell. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I wasn't selling. I'm just fucking helping her out. Blah blah blah. At the end of it, she goes, you know. She's like, I'm the fucking like corporate manager. She didn't say fucking. She said, I'm the manager over here at Bloomingdale's. And she goes, how'd you like to come work for me? She goes, you're fucking great at customer service, all shit like that. I go, really? And I'm like, right there at my job. She's like, yeah, just come in and meet with me like tomorrow morning or something before your shift. And she's like, we'll just talk about it. And I go, okay.
So did she promise more money?
Well, I showed up there and I did make a little bit more money.
Oh yeah, that's
it was
what
like
I'm talking about.
$2 more an hour.
But that's better than.
I gotta tell you though, you always take those jobs. If somebody comes in and offers you a job, chances are they're gonna give you something a little bit better. But it's always better when you don't have to make a resume in turn.
Oh man, yeah.
The last couple
when you
of
get
jobs
that recommendation
I've had,
and you just go straight in. That's
Well, on paper it sounded good. You make $2 more. You're working at a bigger store, Bloomingdale's. I got to wear a suit every day. And at the time, I was like, this could be cool.
Yeah.
I'll and they offered me commission. Guess didn't offer me commission.
Oh,
so as much as I sold at Guess, I didn't make any money off of it. So I go, if I can sell at Bloomingdale's, that's what it was. The commission sold me on the job.
So you got the $2 raise and plus commission?
And plus commission.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So
there you go.
But listen, I worked at Bloomingdale's for 4 days.
What happened, dog? This is just
until Sears came into Bloomingdale's and offered me an even better job.
And then Sears goes out of business.
Yeah,
no.
There is.
So no, I started working a couple days. By day two, I was sick of putting that suit on. I had to wear a name badge. I didn't fucking like that shit.
Yeah.
Bloomingdale's, they haven't, like, you know, and it's you know, fashion specialist or some shit like that on your name tag and your name. And I started working there, and I'm like, okay, put me on the floor. I'm ready to sell.
Right.
And they go like, hold up there, buddy. You're going to do go backs.
What is that?
You know what go backs are, Kevin?
No, what the hell is that?
I don't know. It sounds something. It doesn't
people
sound
that work
good
in retail know what the fuck I'm talking about. Go backs are when people... The dog is sneezing in the other room. That's what that is.
Bless you.
And that sounds like a couch going across
that's
the floor.
That's
we haven't been interrupted by the dog in a while.
Yeah, he goes right up to the vent from the heater and sneezes right into it. So
hilarious.
So he can still be on the podcast.
Yeah, got a little scared, but
go
ahead.
Go backs, if you're in retail, you know what go backs are. Go backs are if somebody decides, like if you work at Target, somebody decides that they don't want to buy something last minute, then the girl at the register takes it. The guy has to go put it back somewhere. We had it at Guess too. When people try clothes,
that sounds like
on
an easy job.
It is an easy job, but it's a pain in the ass.
Because you're making your commission.
It's an easy job, but I'm not making commission because I'm not selling. And then also, if you work at a Guess did it, and Guess would be like when people tried on clothes, you got go back duty. Like everybody had to do it. All the salesmen, they would rotate who took turns, and then you know you had to put all the clothes back, make sure it was like you know on the hanger right, hanging right, or folded right, and in the right place. So I started at Bloomingdale's, and go backs at Bloomingdale's are another fucking world, you guys. Because I guess you're like, okay, men's jeans. So you can go over to men's jeans, and you look at the color, and then you look at the style, and then you look at the size, and you put it in the right place.
Yeah.
At Bloomingdale's, it's three floors.
Yeah, that's all the oh.
It's three floors, and then you go, it's just a black blouse.
Oh,
and I
my
go,
God.
This I'll could go anywhere.
This is.
Can I just buy the blouse so I don't have to put it back?
That's insane.
So
right?
You would have to look at the tag and go, "What brand is it?" Okay, it's fucking, you know, Betsy Johnson. So now you got to go and be like, "What the fuck floor is Betsy Johnson on?" And then I you know, go three floors and find Betsy Johnson, and then find the women's department, and then find the sweaters department, for fucking 4 days I was doing go backs, and I said, can I go like try and sell? And there is no selling at Bloomingdale's. When's the last time you were at Bloomingdale's and somebody came up to you like, do you need help with anything? No, it's a department store. You go shop yourself.
Yeah, you just buy your what I...
And that's where you need help actually, because it's confusing as fuck at Bloomingdale's. You don't need help in little tiny stores like Sunglass Hut. Can I help you with anything? Oh, you want to put it on my face for me? Because I can handle it.
If you ain't got a little money, you don't belong there. So I remember the first time I went in there and I said, wait a minute, this is out of my tax bracket. I need to go to Macy's.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Macy's is the lower Bloomingdale. Bloomingdale's is expensive. I don't know about y'all, but it's
Bloomingdale's is expensive as fuck.
Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck?
If I'm spending any more than $30 on a pair of jeans, I'm out of there.
Oh, wow. That's a...
And that's a lot.
You can go.
Yeah.
That's like you know you don't need fancy jeans. Yeah, get out of here.
Hey, fucking Target sells Levi's now, so go fuck
yourself. Well, I wear a Guess. Hey man, I wear a Guess and you know Diesel. I don't care.
Maybe go to Marshall's.
I'm the type of guy though.
You know,
like
you get some name brand shit at Marshall's on sale.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Especially the Marshall's in Beverly Hills. Man, Beverly Hills. By the Beverly Center. Yeah, dude.
I always go to this one in Studio City.
That's the one I go to.
But
once in a while I'll travel over there. But
there's
I gotta admit,
Chinese place there too. The Green Apple.
Oh,
anyway,
I killed the Green Apple. Yeah, you
it's
like
good,
Green
right?
Apple?
Fuck
oh,
yeah, dude, it's good.
Dude.
It's a little expensive too. But Kevin's story, Lockwood's story, reminded me of that Bloomingdale's thing because the way that I left, I didn't quit. I didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
What did you do?
I walked out.
Yeah,
what
walked
out.
That is the
renegade
best.
Here's how
right
huge
there.
Bloomingdale's is and how
that's street shit right there. That's,
how many employees level, no? They had and how little like they're not watching you, nothing.
You just walked out?
I just walked and by the way, employees at Bloomingdale's or probably most department stores are not allowed to go out the front door.
Huh?
Because you could steal.
Right.
Employees could steal.
Okay.
So you have to go out the back door and be checked. Where there's metal detectors, by the way, and you have to be checked by your manager. Guests maybe do that too. Before you left or go on your lunch break, they would check. Let me see your socks. You opened your purse. That was mandatory.
Wait a minute.
That's insane.
Hold on. This is
yeah.
So you mean to tell me you was working, mm-hmm. and you just walked out? and never came back.
And that's what I'm saying. We're not supposed to go out the front door.
What did you like,
I didn't even get to walk out. I just drove up, looked at it, said, nope, I'm done. And I just
I'm trying to see this. What is going through your mind?
They tell you as an employee that not to go out the front and camera see you going out the front. That's it. You're fired. You have to go out the back and go through the metal detector to make sure you don't steal shit. So
but
when
if you
I just
quit,
left,
who gives a f-
I didn't quit.
You did?
No, I did, but I didn't tell him. I didn't say I quit and throw my fucking apron down. No, I didn't have an apron. I was wearing a suit and I just walked right out the front into the mall.
That's quitting.
And I never looked back. That's quitting.
Yeah, that's quitting.
But guess what? It took like a week before someone said, hey, where have you been?
Exactly.
Paul and we're like, are you
they don't
need
any paying attention
like
to their own system.
They don't even know, bro. They don't even fucking
That's what happened with me at Blockbuster, yeah, man. I kept on getting a voicemail every once in a while. We had to write you up again. Like, what the hell?
Oh, that's man. I don't even see how you even. I'm trying to think of all the ways I've walked off. And I've never, like, just, like, I've completed a shift and then quit.
Yeah, I mostly did that.
Oh, you did that? Okay.
I thought did you that just at most, like, at most of my
jobs. I
thought
you just like hung up a blouse and
not
was like, fuck,
time.
I'm going.
Bloomingdale's was the only time because there was no one fucking there.
Okay.
Even if I wanted to say I quit, there's nobody to tell it to.
I think that would have been
no manager. I mean,
there's managers, but like they're doing they're in their
oh,
own
yeah,
section,
you,
their own shit.
I
so
thought
basically
it
just boiled down to you didn't give a fuck.
It would have been better if you were in the middle of helping somebody. I'm like, let me go see if I got that out back.
So
I'll be
funny.
Right back. And you just left, and then they're just waiting there all day.
Where's the sales guy?
The best part is that day I got my free gift because I guess when you start working at Bloomingdale's, you get a free gift, and I got like a free shirt from like a really high end. I forget what the brand it was.
Right, right.
And I got it. They're like, hey, that morning, they're like, hey, here's your free shirt.
Is there anything
it came
cheap
in today that you
at
ordered.
Huh? Is there anything cheap there?
No.
I mean, yeah, I like, if you go to the polo section, it's the top of the line high
yeah.
polo stuff.
A
it's
tie, like, you're going to pay like
yes.
minimum fucking 40,
yes.
30.
It's so insane. That's what I'm like, wow, okay. You
yeah,
just walked off. I've never heard of nothing.
I
like
get
that.
All my clothes at Target.
Yeah, Target and Marshalls and fucking Ross. Bro.
I'm just t-shirt okay. and jeans, man. I don't need much. I don't like impressing people mm-hmm. with
well,
my clothes.
I don't know if it's because I'm black or it's just that's just the way my mother. I wear everything. So I'm in Target. I wear anything from Target. I'll wear something from Target. I'm this type of dude. Like, I'll wear a Target shirt with a pair of Gucci pants if I have to afford it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't care. If it looks good,
yeah,
I'm rolling with it. If
everybody
it's on
knows
Target,
I'm a Nike
yeah.
dude. Like, I always got fresh Nikes on, but, like, I'll have a fucking shirt from
they
Ross.
Have some. They got some good t-shirts over there at Target.
And I shop at the outlets, too.
Yes, they
like,
do.
If you really want some really good designer stuff, you go to the outlets.
Yeah.
Like, the outlets is, for me, fantastic.
Hey, for comics, when you're on the road, like, oh, I got to do Ontario. I'm like, wait a minute. They got that Nike outlet over there.
Hit it. Nike. Pluck. That's,
yeah,
that's
Target's got dope shirts. Target's always got a shirt that's just, like, got, like, the Goonies on it. I'm like, I got to buy it.
Oh, I know, right?
I go in there, and I always leave out with, like, four or five different things. I don't know why. Target is one of them places where you're like, nah, I don't shop. And
nice
it's like,
show.
Oh, this is a nice, and then you just pick it up. It's
you know what? Shit, I do need fucking salt and pepper shakers that look like mini mason jars. I gotta fucking buy these. They're only $2 each.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I gotta get them.
It's the most.
I need this bar open sign, neon light that's in the corner. I don't have a bar in my apartment, but I want the light.
A sign.
Maybe I can start
bar.
A bar.
Dude, you know what's the? I don't know about
that's
you guys.
That's fucking funny, kid.
But with shopping, are you guys insecure about buying things that men aren't known to buy?
Like tampons?
Like sheets. No, not a tampon. Like sheets. Sometimes I'll be
sheets?
Like, yeah, for some reason it, like
I'm
when
really
I'm
not.
In the section, no, don't bother
I'm
you.
Really
but
not.
It's like, I'm like, man, my girl should be here doing this. Like, it's like.
That's what it is for me. If I have to get something for my girlfriend or my mom or my sister, like for their birthdays or something like that,
oh, yeah.
I'm just walking through the women's section. Or
oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It feels awkward, but, like, you shouldn't. I mean, like.
You shouldn't because
it's
like, you ain't buying it for yourself. They're like, why would he be putting tampons in his
pocket? Well, we're in a day and age that if you were buying it for yourself, nobody would judge you.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I guess
maybe
right
it's because
that.
I grew up in Los Angeles and I fucking have three sisters and grew up with my mom.
See,
it
I'm
really doesn't
Detroit.
Bother me.
Yeah,
I actually think if you go to a female cashier and she sees a young man who takes care of himself and like, you know what, I think that these towels and these sheets will match perfectly. Am I wrong?
Yeah.
I think that the chick thinks that you're more attractive.
Okay.
That's the way I feel
it.
About it.
Sometimes, though, I'm a little bit. I think it's just because I'm just insecure because sometimes I just don't know how to match sheets. And like, I know how, but I don't know how. Like, so I just go in and I'll be like, if I like, I'll see something with some pretty flowers on it, and I'll be like, I can't buy those. I need solid colors. You know what I mean? Because I'm a dude. You know what I mean? Like, we're to your girl. She's going to buy something with flowers. You know what I'm saying?
My first apartment by myself, I was like that. I bought a solid black comforter for my bed. I go, fucking house. Dude, that is the worst idea ever.
Why?
Because you see all the fucking jizz stains.
I don't buy dark sheets. You can't buy dark sheets.
Who checks off on their comforters though? Like,
bro, like you're hooking up with a chick on the bed.
I can't do really dark sheets and I can't do really light sheets. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You gotta find right in the middle. That camouflage.
Light green.
That bodily fluid camouflage.
Anything light is all.
You gotta get Spider-Man like sheets. So if you got a jizz stain, you're like, oh, that's the web.
It's so funny though, because like I could go to Target and I could spend an hour there just going through, because I love getting all my t-shirts there and all the other
that's where I get all my stuff like too, that. Yeah.
My girlfriend, if we're there for more than 15 minutes, she's killing me with her eyes. She's like shooting lasers. She can't be in Target for that long. She's like, she knows what it's so weird, because with shopping, it's the opposite. Yeah, she knows exactly what she wants. She goes right to it. She gets it and she leaves. Me, I'm like, I want to look at. I'm like, I want to get these t-shirts. I want to look at these t-shirts. I want to go look at the video games that just came out. What other movies? Are they having any good deals? She hates it. She hates it.
Jen is like,
that's the first time I've ever. You're the first dude that's ever disclaimed that.
She's not like any other girl.
His girlfriend is not like every girlfriend. Like she fucking loves horror movies. Is like her favorite type of movies and shit. Actually, Jen, my wife, she hates shopping. Going to the mall. Hates it. I go with her to help her buy clothes because she gets frustrated and doesn't get the patience. I help her like pick shit out. I'm the fucking one that I can stay in the mall all day.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Something happens to me in the mall. When I'm in the mall, for some reason, my eyes get really dry, and I can't be in the mall for that long. But any other stores is fine. But it's something about the mall. Yeah. Whenever I'm there for too long, my eyes get really dry and I get really tired.
That's weird.
It's really weird.
I just all the people or something. Like that.
I can't. Man. I can't, man. I have to. When I go to the mall, I'm like, in my head, before I get there, I'm like, I want this color shirt, this, and this.
Yeah.
So I go there, and I only look for those things. I'm not one of those dudes that, like, even when I shop for sheets, I'm like, I want some burgundy sheets, or I want some black sheets, or I'm like, but I don't go in there like, yeah, let me look around and see what they don't fuck. I want to get in and out. But at the same time, I can sit there and be with a woman and shop all day. It's the weirdest thing, but it's like, it's kind of like a pleasure to, it's my own guilty pleasure. I think it's because you think you're going to fuck afterwards and you're like, you know what I mean? You're like, let me be like good looks, and I'm going to be,
I like the looks I get from other women that look at me and they like what I'm doing for my job.
Yes!
Like when she's trying shit on and I'm out the door waiting, they all like look at me and smile. I know they go like, I wish my husband was like that. I love it.
For me, it's more of the social aspect of like actually going out to a store and seeing products on shelves. Because I love movies. I used to go to Blockbuster, the local video stores all the time, and I would go buy like cool stuff. Yeah. But all those things are starting to close down because you're buying everything online.
Yeah.
You don't go
I like
going to
Target
just
looking at all the movies and see what the $5 deals and shit.
Absolutely. You know that like that's what I love, going to stores like that. Where like more stores like comic book stores and like video stores and like Target for t-shirts. Like I can spend all day doing that stuff. Any other stores? No thanks. Like,
well, see, what you guys learned though is to appreciate the art or the idea of shopping. Like, I get mad, bro. Like, I get mad at people online. I get mad, the line is the worst. That's what makes me not want to shop. That's what makes me go, I'm going to get my shirt, I'm going to get in this line, I'm going to deal with these people, and I'm getting the fuck out of here. Like, that's my... I'm out this month. Like, I don't want to talk with to
you,
them.
If you got a girl with you at that point, that's great, too, because I go into Ross, and I go get that thing that you need. I'm gonna get in line right now.
Oh yeah, oh,
that's, no, you're smart. That's what you do. How about this? You've been waiting your ass in line all day, or for a long time. And the person in front of you, like, finally, this person's turn. I'm going to be next. And then the cashier's like, would you like to sign up for a rewards program? They're like, well, tell me more about it.
It ain't nothing to know.
All right, let me get the paperwork. You're going to have to do this, and you're going to have to do this. And before they even get any of the product scanned, it's just like, motherfucker.
In the beginning, when that shit all first started, that was cool. But when people pull that shit off, I'm like, where the fuck you been? Like, there's nothing to read. Like, just sign. But rewards been around for fucking sit like.
You're the only person that reads the fucking fine print.
But that should be at like a separate desk, not in the checkout line. You know what I mean?
I get it, but I don't know.
That's what drives. And also like at 7-Eleven stores. This is why sometimes I always go to 7-Eleven, but I hate it because I'm always behind the lottery people.
Oh, the lines, man.
They take forever, and it's just like so aggravating.
I don't even talk about 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven is just like. 7-Eleven.
You guys got.
You know what 7-Eleven? 7-Eleven is the guy is like the what do you call it? The doctor you have to see when you get gonorrhea. No, when you get gonorrhea. That's what 7-Eleven is.
I don't know what doctor like, is.
I don't know. But.
It's like the STD clinic of all convenience stores. It's just like the abortion clinics. Like you don't want to be there, but you're like, fuck it. I had to pee. Yeah. Let me grab me a soda. But it's just so insane with the riffraff that goes through 7-Eleven. You're like, what the fuck? I just want this Orbit experiment gum and I'm gonna get the fuck out. But this dude is arguing over what type of goddamn coffee it is. It's like, dude, just pick a coffee and get the fuck out. This isn't Starbucks.
7-Eleven, bro. Yeah.
Oh my.
7-Eleven does have a particular odor inside, I will say that.
Yeah, it smells like Slurpees and coffee.
Yeah, like the what?
And nacho cheese. And then, nacho
cheese is in the fucking old ass hot dogs and chicken wings.
Anyway, let's get back to the struggle. You want to talk about the struggle?
Dude, I knew this was going to be a good topic for all of us. Like, we'll fucking just go. No, that's all right. That's all right. And then, by the way, another fucking... The whole topic I want to talk about is... I think Doc would be a great guest for it because I wanted to talk about, like, sometimes when you're following your dreams, you have to have a fucking day job. And some guys think that you don't have to have a day job. They're like, no, man, I'm going to fucking hustle. I'm going to fucking sleep in my van. Like, listen, I got respect for you, but there's no shame in having a day job. It keeps your dream alive.
Yeah. Sleep in your van, but who pays for your mechanics? Mm-hmm. Who pays for your gas? How do you eat?
Exactly.
Who pays for your insurance if you have insurance?
Yeah, you got a shop.
So, like...
You need a cell phone.
Yeah.
How's the booker going to call you?
What people don't realize is, like, you know who I really get mad at? I get mad at the guys... who have these incredible parents that takes care of them.
I was just thinking
or this incredible wife. And I'll be like, you got these people supporting you.
And they go
just
to stand thinking up. That.
And they don't.
I could never do it.
I remember seeing that because, you know, you come out here and you have a little. Sometimes you have a little bit of cash to keep you going for a couple of months. Right. And then if things aren't working out, you have to get a job. But then I would be friends with people who were like. Their parents paid their rent. Mm-hmm. Their parents paid their rent. They it wasn't like that. It wasn't like I had the power shut off on me. I went days without eating. You know what I mean? Like that's what it is. Like going to bed hungry.
Yeah,
I mean that is that sucks.
Yeah.
People don't understand. Like you know what people think? It's so funny because they only see the Louis C.K.'s and they only see the Chappelle's and all these guys that's successful, but they don't really see like even the movie Comedian. That Jerry Seinfeld did, remember? And he was trying to show
the documentary.
How a comic, and I'm like, no, that's a superstar. And he showed like Ornie Adams and them struggling.
Ornie Adams was like,
at the time
so
he was
up
and
he did show that aspect of it.
Yeah, he showed that aspect, but at the same time, it was minimal.
Yes.
To me, versus like what a really, like what people, the real, like, going hungry and
man,
let me tell you, I was sleeping in my car on top, like in the hills, and that was because even though I had a job, I wasn't making enough money support myself.
That's right. Absolutely.
It was like this is insane.
I don't remember the last time I had a bedroom to myself. I live in a living room.
I've been staying in a studio apartment that I have, or bachelor that I've been staying in for the past 3 years. But before that, from year 2012 up until 2014, I was sleeping in my car, and then I was couch surfing, and then my friend, he allowed me to stay there, but I still was sleeping on his floor. Ian Edwards, good dude. Good comic, too.
Oh, yeah. Fuck. Ian Edwards. We've had Ian Edwards on this show before.
Yeah, yeah, Ian Edwards. So Ian is like, he helped me. Even though I didn't ask, he just was like, "Nah, man." I was like, "Man, I'm trying to do this." So yeah, he was like, "But still, doc, don't sleep in your car." He was like, "Why you? I ain't even know because I ain't tell nobody." But it was like, I lost my place that I was originally staying, and I said, "Well, I want to try to do comedy." Mm-hmm. And all these years, I was working at the dealership. I worked for Ford for like 13 years. Nobody knows that. Wow. Yeah, I got laid off. I didn't get the bus job. I got laid off. Well, technically, I got fired, but it just—I just say that because it make my heart feel better. They were like permanent layoff. That's what they told me. It was a permanent layoff, but that's like it's fire.
That's
like,
fire.
Yeah, yeah, I'm gone. I'm done.
That's what
they
say, fire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I collected on, but they told me this. They said, "Here's what's crazy. The guy who let me go, he said, you know what? We're gonna give you the green light to get unemployment for 2 years."
Right.
And he said, "And I heard you was a comedian, so maybe that's what you need to start doing." He said, "So we're going to let you go and go do comedy, man." And he said, "And much successful." Yeah. So I collected unemployment for 2 years before the bus drive.
Then you can just focus on stand-up only.
Mm-hmm. You know what? You would think, but I was so insecure as a comic, and I still was growing. I wasn't, at that time, not good enough to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's different if you hot. Or you got some buzz about you and you killing it, but I wasn't killing it, man.
You were still trying to figure out. I mean,
yeah, I'm trying to figure out if I still want to continue to push forward.
I mean, well, because comedy isn't just turn it on as soon as you want to start doing comedy. It takes years to even find jokes that you like doing. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, it takes a while to get to that
point. Yeah, it's a buildup. And you know what, man? Like, people don't understand. Comedy is just like being anything else big. If you look at people who go to school to be a computer engineer or a doctor, they gotta build that. They're freshmen with no experience, and then they learn, and then they gotta go out in the world and apply what they learn and gain that experience. So it's the same thing. It's a constant cycle of just growing.
Yep.
And it's one of the most hardest things to dedicate yourself to, because unlike a doctor or anybody who goes to college, there is no format. There's just, you go out there and give it the best you got.
Yeah, 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 pretty much. It's like, here's a slap on the back. Good luck.
Yeah, there are so many.
But like you, like how we're saying is, it's great to have the drive to do, you know, the artistic stuff and do comedy and stuff. And then eventually, you know, sometimes that definitely doesn't pay the bills and you have to get another job, day job. But there's always a point where you need to leave that day job too. You know what I mean?
There is.
It's even more important to know when you got to leave to focus more on your career you're not going to be successful if you don't eat.
Comedy is like anything else. If you're trying to be a doctor, lawyer, whatever, you have to be honest in what you're doing with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't understand, like, some people in this business, like, I worked at a comedy store for 11 years. And you see these guys who, they've been doing comedy since the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And they claim that they were this and this and that in the 80s and 90s. But I'm like, bro, I got a TV. like, no, you wasn't. Like, you wasn't this guy that you're saying you are. Like, stop doing this. So it's those people that live in denial. And the problem is because Hollywood, people succeed at all ages. They just all of a sudden just, they didn't get nothing all while they were trying when they were younger. Then boom, they just explode. So you got this plethora of just untalented people believing that any moment it can happen. And it's just like, what? So it's such a fine line to know where you are and what position and claim that and say to yourself, what do I got to do to make myself advance further? So when I was at the comedy store, when I seen that I wasn't getting like booked by clubs on my own and things wasn't really happening like that, I go, man, what? Man, hold on. Like I said, I got to leave. I gotta start thinking about what am I doing?
Exactly.
Like, I didn't get in this game to just be sitting here working and parking cars, because that's what I was doing at the club. I was parking cars.
It's okay to do it for a little bit if there's promise of advancement. Yes. And you know what I mean? Yes. But when that's yes. that's what they just see you as and no more than that.
Yeah. Yes.
You got to know when to get out.
Man, it was out, like.
I overstayed my welcome working at the comedy club. Not that I overstayed my welcome. It was just I went longer than I should.
No, I think you did it. Like at this point and watching you and seeing what you're doing, man, like you fucking doing it, bro. Like it's not about selling out all the places right away. Mm-hmm. It is eventually what you believe. That's your end goal.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? But it's the progress and the things you do in between it. And when I watch you versus a lot of other people who don't have, who have more than you and still don't push as hard as you do, mm-hmm. it's what you've been achieving. I've been like, damn, Angel, man, you're doing it, Augustino. Like, that's the part of
it. It's infuriating to watch, bro.
Oh, man. I know. Man.
But I mean, like, I've always been like that. I fucking love being on stage. And more than I love being on stage, I love the trial and error. I love working on a bit and not knowing if it's going to work. I actually really like that feeling the most.
Yeah, yeah.
I like doing these little rooms. Like, some guys, you know, they're like, oh, man, I'm headlining. I'm not going to go to no open mic. Fuck you. You're an asshole.
Yeah, you are an asshole.
I lose a big, giant amount of respect for people.
But those are the people
go do open mics because they think they're too cool for school.
But that's the people that never achieve and gets better. Mm-hmm. It's like, you see me, I'm in open mics too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because I'm like, I'm not this guy.
Yeah.
I'm not the guy. Like, I am the guy who I want to be as far as what I believe I am.
Yeah.
But as far as where I am in my position right now, I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
So like, I got to get to where that guy. And until I get to that guy, I got to keep taking risk. And that's what it's about. It's about risk. And people don't want to take risk.
It is about risk, like, but at the same time, too, it's like when you take enough risks, sometimes you're going to be like, all right, well, I can't risk this just so I can take an even bigger risk later. You know what I mean? That's what it, for me, about getting the other jobs and stuff like that. Like, it's like... It's so weird because it's a catch-22 because you can't go out and do comedy all the time if you're not making money, but you also can't make money doing that unless you're doing it all the time. You know, it's just the risk going back and forth because I looked at it as cycles. I'm like, I'll have a job for like 6 months and then I'll quit it so I can focus more on something else for 6 months for like, you know, acting and filmmaking. And then back to a job for another 6 months just to like build up money and then live off of it. Build up money and then live off of it.
See, I never done that. I don't know about you, but I'm like, fuck it, man. It's all about the comedy. I did that in the beginning when I was working at the dealership, but after a certain point, it was like, when I got laid off at the dealership, technically fired. like I just, man, that hurt me. And from that point on, I said, man, fuck, I'm all about stand up. That's it. And anything that comes from that derives from that, cool. But stand up is all. So when I do things, it's all built to support that. And if it doesn't support that, get the fuck out of here. Yeah, like the bus job, get the fuck out of here. I was like, it wasn't that's conducive for me to become a comedian.
After I left the Ha, I felt like I'll take a job as soon as, as much as I appreciate the jobs I got after that, and the people were real cool, me and the boss was really cool. If I would ask for like, hey, I gotta have this weekend off, you know what I mean? I gotta go on the road or something like that, you know, with Uncle Joey, they'd be like, you can't take this week. As soon as someone would say that to me, as nice as they were to me, I would go, fuck you, I'm gone.
That's why I tell people, like, whatever your dream is, if you want to be a lawyer, you want to be a doctor, number one, you got to surround yourself around the same type of people.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to do that, everything around you has to be the center. Like it's like the whole thing is an atom. Comedy is an atom, right? And the nucleus comedy is the atom. The nucleus is you and what you want to be, right? But you have to surround yourself with the protons and electrons and surrounding yourself with those people in that environment around you.
To keep
to keep moving, to keep functioning, keep existing. So like it, whatever you're trying to do, you gotta have that in mind. Like, okay, this is what I want to do. It might take this much sacrifice to do this, but I got to do this way in order for me to become what I want to become, and I got to surround myself with these type of people. That's how it is. You can't be a doctor if you surround yourself with computer engineers. You can't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, how the fuck you get your ass over at the hospital? What are you doing over here at Microsoft? It's like, yeah, well, I want to do open heart surgery. Like, hold on, you in the wrong
But you're building. Not going to go to a butcher shop, you know, if you want to be a surgeon.
Yeah, you can't. It's, so I just feel like that's the basis of what you're doing. Everything, like, I didn't understand that in the beginning when I moved out here to LA. I just thought, I'm going to get me a job. And once the job, once I get something else going on, then I'm going to leave that job and then I can pursue comedy more. But it didn't go like that. And I'm not saying that that's the definition for everybody. I'm just telling you that's my path.
The thing is, it's like, there are like guidelines you can take to be successful in a certain aspect, whether it's filmmaking, comedy, or whatever. And chances are, if you use that path, you're more than likely gonna find success.
Yeah.
But a lot of time, you have to find your own way.
Yeah.
Like, you have to create ways for you to get into your opportunities.
There's
and
no
sometimes
one
it's
way.
Like invent. And that's right. There's not one way.
Yeah.
You have to, and that's where the struggle and the hustle come. One and one, like, because you'll think outside the box on how you can get yourself these opportunities without doing the normal path that everybody else does. As long as you can see how you can get yourself into those situations, you know what I mean? Like,
as long as your power points to where you're trying to become, like Louis C.K. Like, people don't know, like, Louis C.K. used to write for years on Conan and Chris. Everybody loves Chris, and
he was George Carlin's opener.
Yeah.
Louis C.K. was George Carlin's opener.
Yeah, so it's incredible for him to become.
He didn't make it. He wasn't a household name.
No, people just see him as just this Louis.
10 years
like,
ago, maybe?
Yeah, like 05, you know, 06. That's when he started. And it was like, people don't realize the true dedication that Louis had to that. Louis. And it goes back to what you were saying. Like, Louis was writing and he made his foundation for his money. But at the same time, even though he was that guy, they still wasn't giving him specials. So Louis said, fuck it, huh? You know what? Let me do my own thing and put mine on my own website. Use my own money that I saved up. And then when he did that, it was like, boom, done. It's so insane.
When you start to do it yourself, like, because that's what I did with filmmaking. Like, I was doing stand-up comedy for 9 years, and I loved it, and it was fun, but I essentially came out here to make movies. And once stand-up comedy gave me the opportunity where I met the filmmakers, where I wanted to make movies, and I just got into that way. That's like how, and now I've, for the last year, that's all I've been doing is building this production group. And we're in the middle of filming three shorts right now.
Yeah,
so you know what I mean? Like, it's like I was sick of auditioning for stupid shit that I hated.
Yeah.
And like, literally for the first 5-6 years auditioning out here, well, every time I went in to read for something, a TV show, everything, I hated it. I didn't understand it. I hated it. And I'm like, I want to start just making shit on my own terms. You know what I mean?
I don't know. For me, I felt like, and I still feel like that, there are some people that are just, they just get it as soon as they come here. And Augustine don't know what I'm talking about. You get these comics that's just getting opportunity after opportunity, and they're able to pursue their passion because of these opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of us, 90%, I'm going to say that's 10%. I'm like really giving a big cushion with
10%. I believe you on that.
Yeah, and it's like these people are like anomalies. But at the same time, you just see them eating, and then you're sleeping in your car, and you're like, how the fuck is this happening? This guy ain't even that fun. But it's, so you just realize, like, you just got to keep pushing yourself to become whatever you want to be, like, and so if you want to be a stand-up comedian, man, I gotta push and get the stage time. I gotta push to make the money to get myself out there. Whatever I gotta do, it's all connected to me being a comedian. This shit is it's the hardest thing, because you don't, if you, like you say, if you work a regular job, what happens? Oh, you know what? I got this show this weekend. No, you don't. You got to clean these urinals, mm-hmm. and that's what you got to do. You're like, God, because those are the kind of jobs. You can't take a high entry job. High level entry job. You can't do that.
It's got to be a job that you don't care if you just have to call. Right. I'm like, yeah.
If I get fired, I'll just go get another one. Just like
exactly.
Exactly.
That's what you
think you're the only one that uses toner?
Yeah. It's so many.
Well, I mean, it's because it takes a long time. That like and this is what I heard when I first moved out here is if you make it within the first 5 years. It's considered an overnight success. If you make it within 10 years or around 10 years, that's a career. That's like the way I've seen it, because people who come up fast, they tend to not stay up there that long.
Well, yeah, that's because, man, it's like Michael Jordan when he won his championships, eight years. Even LeBron, like it took them a long, like 8-9 years before they finally got their first championship. So it's what happens is If there are exceptions like a Magic Johnson who won his rookie year in 80, then he won in 82 and so on and so forth. But then again, you have to look at his team. But what I mean is like there are certain people that are like that. But for the most part, if you get it too early, you're just not ready. Mm-hmm. Al Cassino will tell you like it takes time to really develop an hour worth of stage time. Now I get it. If you get that opportunity to shoot a special after 5 years of doing comedy, but you've been headlining for at least 3 to 4 of those years, an hour, then yeah, I can see. Hours that long. Yeah, you ready? Because you've been crunching it. But even then, how really good is it? Mm-hmm. Where to as somebody like Louis, he said it took him after 15 years to even.
Yeah.
He said 27. He said it was 15 years when he had the revelation. Man, I need to throw away this hour and start creating better. And then he said it took like 25 to 27 years for him to really pop as a comic. So that's you talking
25 content. Years for the first special, and then a special every year after.
Yes,
but it's all worth it at the end.
Just skill, like he built hours of skill, and I think that's what a lot of people don't understand.
Sometimes you gotta throw away that set you've been doing for too long. Always have to throw away that set you've been doing way too long.
You don't have a choice.
I can't believe I still see guys that I've known forever and I haven't seen them in like a long time. 3 years later, I haven't seen you in 3 years. Like I see him on stage, he's still doing the same jokes, bro. Come on, and he always tells me this guy, particularly I have in mind right now. He always tells me, bro, fucking Netflix, bro. I just shot my special, I did it myself, I'm gonna edit myself, and I'm gonna fucking sell the Netflix, bro. And I'm like, bro, I just watched you do the same joke you did 10 years ago.
Yeah. It's so...
They don't even have Blockbuster anymore. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like stuff like that. Like,
it's so hard to look those guys in the eye, because when you do, they don't look at you back. Mm-hmm. Because they know, man. They know they ain't ready.
Yeah.
But they try to cite... You know, this is a saying in Hollywood, and I hate this goddamn saying. Fake it till you make it. Man, come on.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I hate that.
Who you think you fooling?
Yeah.
You fooling yourself. You're not fooling, because what happens is once you get to that point, America goes, wait a minute, who the fuck is this? Why is he? We don't like this guy.
Yeah.
You're faking our people in Hollywood, true, but when this is a business. And when Hollywood makes money, is why? It's because America goes, oh, shit, that dude right there funny than a motherfucker. We come into every show. We come to every movie. We watching every time he's on TV. That's who makes Hollywood money. Hollywood can choose who they want to choose, but Hollywood don't have a golden touch all the time. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, it's insane. When I hear people say that, I'm like, beat it. This is ridiculous.
That reminds me a lot of my first roommate I had out here, and he was that mentality, fake it till you make it. You have to dress a certain way. Sometimes he would try to go rent a car and go out to events, like nicer car and stuff like that. And it was so bad to the point I'm like, I mean, not only is that just bad decision-making, but it's just like, that's not who I want to be friends with, somebody who's fake. Because he would like, man, he was telling me he knew how to network, though. He knew how to network. But he was a completely different person when he was just himself. And it was crazy. He got like Kanye West's number one time, I think through a promoter that he met. Girl. And he was telling me, and he still didn't see how he was wrong. He just randomly called up Kanye. and try to have a conversation with him to try to get into his social circle. And he just like, and the way he told the story to me, I'm like, he still didn't understand that what he did is like, he's like, yeah, man. And then I called Kanye. He was just like, who the fuck is this? And he was like, yo, man, it's me. I won't say his name. He's like, I met you at this party. Right. But he didn't even meet him at the party. He just met somebody at that party who happened to have a call sheet that happened to have Kanye's number on it.
Why would you even do that? And like, then, you don't know this dude. If this dude didn't give you the number, why would you even... Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
And then he...
Self-sabotage.
And then he tried to set me up for something like that. He tried to get... the other comic, the older comic, Louis, a bigger guy, the older comic. What was his name?
Louis Black?
No, Louis...
Anderson?
Louis Anderson. He's like, yo, man, you know Louis Anderson? I'm like the comedian? He's like, yeah, I got his number. I'm like, nice. I'm like, cool. How'd you get that? He goes, I got it from a call sheet. I'm like, okay. And then he's like, I know you're doing comedy. You should call him. I'm like, wait.
What are you gonna say? Wait.
What do you mean? I should just call him? He goes. You know what you should do? You should call him, and you should say, hey man, I want to be a comic. Can I take you out to dinner? I'm like, wait. you want me to call Louis Anderson as a complete stranger and ask him out on a date?
If you're a good looking dude. And you take him to a nice place, Louis Anderson might go.
Probably.
That's the next question. How good looking was this dude was?
Well, the thing is, he had this charm, but that charm was only his networking persona. Because when you got back, because I lived with him, when you got back to the apartment and you got to see how he was really, he wasn't like that at all.
I feel like I know who you're talking about. Don't say the name. I won't.
But I met him, right? You have the instinctual knowledge to know, to feel who that is. That's just.
And he was a downer, too. Every day he would try to make me feel bad about. You know, the way I was, because it was my first year there. I met him in college, but he would be like, he's like, man, you're doing nothing for your career today. I'm like, I just went on an audition yesterday. I'm waiting for callbacks. I'm like, what else can I do? Like right now, this second, like that's what it was. And it would drive me crazy. He was such a downer. And the thing is, I thought it was just me, but everybody else who knew him, who I met, they all had the same things to say about him. And that mentality of fake it till you make it. That may work good for you in short term, but it's always gonna bite you in the ass. And now he left California with zero friends. Now nobody talks to
him. Well, it depends on. Now I've seen some people. There's a reason that con artists exist. You know what I'm saying? Like Wolf on Wall Street is real. You know, you get these guys that can achieve high success in doing this, but those guys. Versus the other guys who try to do the shit and they are horrible at it. It's like there are more horrible dudes that's horrible at it than there is that are really successful at it. And those guys that are successful at it, you know what they realize? They realize it is short term, like you say. So they go, okay, I got this gap, this time span to do this with this dude, but it's just for this because I'm going to be this way with this guy. I'm going to fake it with this guy so that I can get to the next guy. Mm-hmm. And then they be like, get the fuck out of here. Exactly. And they move on. I've seen them just move up. And I'm like, holy shit, this fake ass.
That's why I became friends with you instantly because you were the opposite of that, Augustino. Like you were like one of the most realist people. No, it was.
Of
it was
Studio City. Get at.
That's right. He was like, You can spot fake people from a mile away, especially if you spend more than a week with them. You know what I mean? And it's kind of funny because you're from out here. You grew up right here.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. What people fail to realize, I mean, with my experience, the people that actually grew up in Los Angeles aren't fake.
That's right.
It's the people that come from the fucking other states.
Yes. I'm from another state, but I ain't fake.
I know people from out here that are fake as fuck.
Oh, you do? Okay. I know people. I'm just fake as fuck.
No, but I understand what you're talking
Every
about.
Every time
like,
I talk to somebody that's fake, they're from another fucking state. It's like you fake.
Well, they're playing Hollywood.
Yeah, they're playing. Like, and we're
they were sold an idea of Hollywood, and then they moved to Hollywood, and they thought that's how I have to be, and that's not really.
But
that.
Here's the thing. You know what's funny though, is you at least you recognize that those people in LA, they're fake.
Yeah.
So they're real. Because they are who the fuck they are.
That's true.
Hey, like, they just, know, yeah.
They're just assholes, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. They're just, well, not fake. They're just not sincere. Just like, yeah. they're just a completely different
But these
person.
Other people we're talking about are the people who've come from another state.
Yeah.
And are, like he said, he just said it. This dude acts like this, but he's really like this.
Yeah.
So he's...
Well, listen.
He's obvious.
There are guys that, like you said, will make are faking it. And they may make it for a little while.
Yeah.
Like we all said, but eventually they'll go away. There are guys that we know that we won't mention that they were hot for a little while. But you know what? The guys that hung in there and sacrificed the most because they never changed themselves. These people are changing themselves to become what they think Hollywood wants.
Exactly.
Yeah. The guys, I'll tell you right now, you're going to agree with me. Joey Diaz, just examples.
Okay.
And Joe Rogan, for examples. Will sell tickets for the rest of their life because they didn't become what Hollywood was buying.
Uh-huh.
They stayed who they were until Hollywood said, "Fuck, we'll fucking buy it."
Yeah. Man.
So those guys are will always sell tickets
because Joey and Joe Rogan, like when I look at those two dudes, it's like, okay, they come from the old school knowledge.
Mm.
And they understand work and hustle. They really do.
Sure.
So when you see them being who they are as comedians, that's because that's all a derivative of their work and hustle, and they understand what it takes to be these guys. You know, Joey Diaz been doing comedy, and now he's popping. He's like 52.
Yeah.
But he's been there since the early 90s.
He started in 91.
Yes. So when you see them and what they do, you see just exactly who the fuck they are.
And you don't think along the way when people said like, "Hey, Joey, if you were a little cleaner, you know, I could book you more. You could be on this TV show." You don't think that he was told that? Like, of course he was.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on. And you both know Joey. That ain't
Rogan.
Happening.
Yeah, Joey, and the same thing with Rogan. When like they weren't doing the store for a while, or like these clubs don't want to have. Joey tells me fucking stories all the time. When him and I go on the road, he tells me like, "Bro, this club. What's it? We were on the road one time. I won't say where, but we were doing this club, and he goes, "This same club that we're doing this weekend." I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "Bro, they told me they would never ever book me." He goes, "Because I'm not their style comedy. I won't make it in their town. I won't sell tickets in town. And I'm too dirty." He goes, "Now they're fucking calling me, asking me to book them." Like, you know what I'm saying?
I remember the first time I met Rogan, it was maybe like 1 or 2 years after I was coming to the Comedy Store just watching shows more consistently than performing and open mics and shit. And he was on Fear Factor at that point, like maybe 2 years. It was hot, you know, after 2 years ago. After the first year, it was pretty hot. So, like, I remember pulling Rogan to the side in the parking lot, you know, and I said, "Man," this before I started working, I said, man, I said, "How did you get this comedy going?" And he said, "Listen," and he was on the phone, but he actually stopped and to tell me, he said, "Listen," he said, I used to be a karate, taekwondo, I had a taekwondo school or whatever it was.
Jiu-jitsu,
whatever it was. He said, "I had a school," and he said, "I quit that and I lost everything." He said, "I lost my apartment." He said, "I lost my car." And he said, "I just went for it." And he said, that's basically it. You got to push past everything and not care what nobody else think and just do it. And he said, "And it'll happen." He said, "Man, sorry, man, but I'm on the phone. I can't talk to you right now." I said, "Okay, I just wanted to know that." And I walked away. So I'm like, but that's the dedication.
I started standing up in a similar way. I always want to do it. And I decided to pull the trigger when I fucking lost my job from one of the retail stores that I worked at.
Well, for me, it was like when I was in college, my roommate, because I was a theater major in college, and my roommate, he was in charge of booking all comedians for the student activities in the college. And so every Friday, I'd go down to his office, and we would just watch tapes and tapes of comedians for him to book. And then, like, I just started getting – I'm like, I just loved the art of stand-up comedy and doing it. And then – 2 weeks after I graduated college is when I started doing stand-up, and like that's what got me into doing it, just because I just loved getting on, because I was a theater major, I loved getting on stage, but I didn't know that I loved doing comedies on stage and theater and stuff, but I loved making people laugh at your own original
it's
material.
It's funny that a lot of comics started doing comedy because they're like, fuck it, everything else is going bad, so what do I have to do? Yeah.
That's funny. I swear, man, when they let me go, I originally moved to California to try to get into acting and stand-up, right?
Yeah.
You know, but stand-up was my main leeway. And I was like, you know, I'm going to hold on to this job, and I'm going to just keep. And when they let me go, man, that, I'm telling you, bro, that was just like a stab in my heart. I said, you mother, like, all these years I dedicated to this company, and y'all just gone.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, I was, at the same time, even though he told me, yeah.
I've been there. Yeah, it hurts.
It was like, it was flattering enough to have somebody support what I was doing. But it was kind of a slap in my face because I was like, man, I felt like I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to leave yet. I want to leave when I'm ready. Like, I don't want to leave when you think I'm ready. Like,
so well, that's the word. I mean, because essentially, I mean, psychologically speaking, that's just telling you that you're not good enough. When somebody, when a job is ready to get rid of you before you're ready to leave a job. Like, that's what sucks about it. Yeah. And that's why I've worked at jobs longer than I should have at some points. I mean, not out here, but just like in general, like growing up before, it's just because, like, you know, I would try to get fired. I don't like to quit. It was always awkward, but it's just
they had a choice to let people go. He let me go because I became like a deja go, because I don't know about y'all, but as a comedian, I was like, whenever I would get yelled at about my job, in my head, I'd be like, man, fuck you. I'm a comedian. Like, I don't need this. Yeah. Like, it was like that. So I think they felt it. So when it was time to let somebody go, they was like, you know what?
Yeah.
You're the dude who go around here cracking jokes and making people laugh, and we know you do this for a living. Why don't you, or you're trying to do this for a living, maybe you need to go and try to do that. Yeah. Instead of being here, because your heart
ain't approved you for the 2-year unemployment. He kind of wasn't completely an asshole.
No, he wasn't. He was so I couldn't even get mad at him. I was like, you
mother.
Two years,
no work.
Yeah, I was like, all right.
Kevin fucking got me a job. Him and I worked together in the beginning when I first started stand up. I met him at an open mic at the HaHa before I worked there. Before I worked at the HaHa, bro, Kevin and I worked together. For a fucking cleaning company.
And you know who got me that job at the cleaning company? Oh. The guy who, my old roommate, who was faking it till he made it. And he got me a cleaning job, which was great for auditions.
So you do know who it is, huh?
He always knew who it was. Okay. But the thing is, we would, and this is why that job was great. It paid you just enough to live off of, but it had enough flexibility to, if you had an audition or if you had something else to go to. Because I was auditioned. That was the main reason why I was doing that.
Yeah.
Is because it gave me consistent income. But at the same time, whenever – I'm talking about – I never missed an audition. I was able to do this job, and then I would get a call from my agent. And it's like, hey, you have an audition. You have an audition in 2 hours. And I would look at my cleaning schedule, and I would call the client. I'm like, hey, can I bump this back a couple hours? They're like, oh, yeah, sure. No, whenever you can come here. It's like, all right, cool. And I would go to the audition and go back. That was the best.
In that sense, it was cool. But, I mean, that job was so physically exhausting sometimes, though, that, man, it was almost
like it's not even worth the time or money. Yeah, any cleaning job. I used to clean banks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, here's the thing. I originally tried comedy when I was in Detroit, right?
So are you from Detroit?
I'm from Detroit, Michigan.
And
Pistons down, did it?
And
I don't even know what.
Shout out.
I don't really follow sports, so I didn't understand any of that.
Okay, that's cool.
When
did you move? So you started off in Detroit, and when did you come out here?
When I was like 23, 24, and I moved out here like 26.
Okay,
but the problem was Detroit. That? I was going through like.
It doesn't matter. That was the same year. That was the same age I was when I moved out here from where I.
Yeah,
where I
you came. Guys are so much younger than me. I'm 43. Y'all are.
I'm 34.
And 34. Okay, well, you're still though. It's still. I'm still 8-9 years old.
I.
But what I'm saying is it's. I just felt like I was going through so much in Detroit mentally, so I wasn't doing a stand up at all, at all. I took a comedy class. That helped. Like, if you're taking a comedy class out there, I'm going to tell you how much it's going to help you. 1%. That's about it. All they can tell you is how to do technique. The rest is experience of going up and bombing and going through your material and finding yourself.
Being on stage is the best.
Yeah.
Being on stage by yourself with no other students and no teachers.
So what that means? That means don't take a fucking class. You don't need it. Unless you just have, like, you just.
It's just somebody taking your money when the real class is on.
You're spending four or five. Oh, man.
I mean, even then, basics. Like, fucking learn to hold a microphone yourself.
Exactly. So I said to myself, I was like, man, I need to. I was going through, like, a lot of stuff. I had going through depression and stuff like that when I was younger. And I said, man, I need to really concentrate on what I want to do. So I said, you know what? The only way is I can move to L.A. So we had a family reunion out here. Well, it actually wasn't my family reunion. It was somebody else's, and they invited me. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to come. And then I came out here, but they didn't know. And I was like, shit, I'm going to try to find some work out here. And I found a job. We came out here in July. I moved out here in September. Like, next 2 months, I was like, I'm gone. I packed up everything, and I was gone. And from that point on, I said, now I got to figure out how to do this. So I... This girl brought me to the Standard Hotel. You know that Standard Hotel on famous Sunset Boulevard down the street from the Comedy Store? Yeah. Good hotel for some burgers, good scenery, great scene of the city when you can overlook the city. It's beautiful. So I went there and with her, and the first nights there at that restaurant, I saw Martin Lawrence and Lawrence Fishburne. And the girl goes, what? She goes, this is crazy. I've been up here for years. I live here. I've never seen stars. First night with you, I see two major stars. And I was like, this is fantastic. And we rolled by the Comedy Store. And she was like, that's the Comedy Store. And I was like, man, I need to go over there. So from there, that's where it progressed. I went to the open mic after a while. And I was working at the Ford dealership. And I was like trying to figure it out, man. And it wasn't until like 05, 04, I moved in Hollywood. I started working at a Ford dealership in Hollywood. Then they hired me at the Comedy Store, and from that point on, it kind of snowballed.
Were you working at the Comedy Store in Ford at the same time at one point, or no?
Yeah, I worked from 2004-2005 all the way to 2009.
When did you clean banks? Where did you clean banks?
Oh, I cleaned banks back when I was in Detroit.
In Detroit,
yeah.
So, what does that entail? You're just like emptying the trash and vacuuming and doing the dusting and shit.
Oh man, you know it's so crazy. One time, the tellers forgot to drop their money. And there was like $20,000 sitting on top of the counter.
Oh, shut up.
So, yeah, I'm cleaning. And you know how, like, you feel like you're being set up? Like, I'm cleaning. I'm
that's exactly. It's too good to be true.
Yeah. I was like, what the fuck? And then I walk in. I go, oh, my fucking God. But now, don't get it twisted. They still had them. I don't know if you know, but in banks. You see on the movies where they have the ink dye?
And they have
the traps. Yeah. So they was in the traps, bills. But they forgot to just drop the money with the traps on them. So it was like...
They were trap bills,
though? It was bills before they got inked? Is that what you're saying?
No. So, like, the bills are in this little contraption that has an ink thing on it.
Yeah.
So they forgot to put them up into the thing. At this particular bank, that's how they did it. So it was like... I could have just took the money and tried to figure out how, because what happens is if you take the trap off, it spills the ink all on the money, so you can't spend it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But when I saw the money, I was like, "What the fuck?" Like I was like, "How is this?" So I left a note and this and that, and I just put the money down where nobody could see it, and then the next day. They didn't give me shit.
They just
left me a note like, thank you. You know, the manager talked to the person who left his money out. It was like, fucking nothing. I don't get $100 or nothing.
I was like,
they should have gave me.
No. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Raise.
But like, at least like.
At least, Starbucks gift card.
At least it wasn't the next day. We tested you when you passed. It wasn't that.
Oh yeah.
At least it wasn't an obvious setup.
I don't know if it was like $20,000, but it was three stacks, the big like stacks of $100 bills. That's all it was.
It's like corporate is so fucked.
I mean, that's one thing if you're out in a public place and you see a stack of money, like in a bush. You're like, all right, well, I can take that.
Yeah, this is probably just like, Dateline.
And you're at a bank and there's like $20,000 sitting right there. Yeah, it's cool just to look at, but you... Don't even touch it.
I was so scared, bro. I was like, are they setting me? Because I at that point, I had been cleaning banks for about a year because I had two jobs. I worked at the Ford dealership, and I worked at cleaning the banks. So after the dealership at 5:30, the banks would close at 6. Then at 7, I would go in and clean banks all the way, and I would go from bank to bank to bank. So I had, I think, 5 banks. And it's simple. It's like you just... You really don't be doing too much cleaning. You just look around and you go, okay, some footprints over here. You just clean up those footprints. You
know, residential and fucking
commercial.
Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about. So like the windows was the main thing because people always put their hands on windows. Yeah. So those were the main things you had to clean. Well, some of them were cool
because one of my clients in the cleaning places was Will I Am Studio from the Black Eyed Peas in Glendale. I would go there. I would have to clean that place every Sunday. And I did
that with you a couple times.
Yeah, I would go in, but most of the I would do it by myself. And I would it would be like maybe 8 o'clock in the morning on Sundays. I'd open up the door, like pushing open beer cans and stuff like that, because they would party all weekend.
Oh yeah.
And sometimes there'd be people passed out right in the main lobby where I was going to go clean. Yeah, fucking is.
How do you like?
It wasn't that big. It wasn't that big of a space. And because
so what do you say to those people? Like that's
no, it's because because the owner of the studio officially hires me to be there at 8 a.m. and he told me not to worry about it. I hate fucking name dropping, but I talked to Will I Am personally about it. Okay. And he's just like,
you already dropped him.
Yeah, he dropped him. But when you walk in there, if there's anybody sleeping, just tell them I said to get the fuck out. You know, say that. Yeah. He said, just say, like, you're supposed to be there. Don't worry about them. You just do it. You do what you got to do.
Why were they? Oh, because they were partying.
They were partying the night before. Man, so many times I'd walk in there and the place would be a mess and I'd be like, fuck, man, this is going to take me. Because sometimes I go in there and the place was already clean from the last time I was there.
Yeah.
You know, the last week I was there, but then there'd be like mountains of beer cans and I'd be like, fuck. Oh, all of a sudden, a studio engineer would come walking out. It's like, whoa, man, it's daytime? You know, because, like, the daylight's coming in. Like, I'm like, yeah, I'm just here to clean. And they'd be smoking a joint. They're like, here you go, man. I'm like, all right, cool. And I'd be like, they would hook me up with stuff all the time. They would blaze me out and then be like, you know what?
I never understood that level of drunk and high, though.
What do you mean?
Like, you walk in and you saw these guys.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't even know you're there. Like that's a level of high and drunk, like, I've been there. I ain't saying I ain't never been there. But I'm saying, dude, those people that do that, they do that consistently. Yeah. Like, I've been there maybe a good 5-6 times. But I'm, like, out of all the times of drinking and back in the day when I used to get high, I just could never really, I didn't like that. Every time I wake up, I'd be like, man, I got to get my shit together.
This
is ridiculous. How did I wake up outside like this? It's the craziest.
That's their nature.
You know how many times I've walked in there and I've scared people awake? I've scared people awake. I would open up the door, all of a sudden they're just like, hey, man, what's going on? I'm like, nothing, just here to clean. Oh, okay.
And you being just an employee, that had to scare you too.
Yeah. Oh, no. Because they were so cool. I was used to it. Okay. They were so cool. I mean, like, because usually all the pass-out people were people I've never met before. Mm-hmm. But then all the engineers who were in charge of the place for the night before, they were all in there still mixing stuff. And then they come out, and I'm like, oh, hey, what's up, Kev? How's it going, man? Like, and like, oh, yeah, they're leaving or anything like that. It wasn't awkward. It's just like sometimes I would, like, if I opened up a door and I would see that there was just, like, a couch in there and somebody's sleeping and the place didn't look too messy, I would just save that room for last. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what I would be cool. I'd be like, hey, man, I've been there. I've woken up in strange places after being wasted.
What was that?
I can go clean up something else, but.
Kevin, what was that? That day spa that we used to clean.
Yeah, that detox day spa.
That's what it was called, detox.
Yeah.
What is that?
It was just a day spa that was right down the street. That was the name of this. I don't even know if they're still in operation.
So it was like a rehab.
No. It was a spot like you go there, you got massages. It was a high. It was a high.
Really
end.
High end. Yeah.
It was really nice.
They had the women's side, the men's side. There was like a little Zen place in between for resting.
Yeah, it was like it was a really nice place.
And we would go
place.
In when they were closed.
Yeah, and like I'm talking like 5 o'clock in the morning. I go there.
Yeah.
And I clean that for like 3 or 4 hours, and then I go right to the Black Hat.
Remember when they had us clean the floors with fucking toothbrushes?
Oh, that was during the deep clean, man.
But that's what I'm talking about. Like at the time, I was doing stand up though, and like I'd be, you know what I mean? You're 5 o'clock in the morning. You're fucking on your hands and knees scrubbing floors, and you know.
But you know what though, Augustino? Because I would do shows that night after I would wake up at fucking 4 or 5 o'clock.
Yeah, of course.
Working it, and I'd go scrub, and I'd scrub toilets, and then I would go and I'd meet with you, and I'd get on stage.
Yeah.
And the laughs that you got on stage just felt so much sweeter after doing stuff like that all day. Like, because I would even go do shows.
No, they
like,
feel pretty sweet when I didn't do any work.
They would feel pretty good. But I'm talking about like, I would go do a show at the Comedy Store. And then I'd get out at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and then I would literally go right down the street to an office building that I had to clean, like right after a comedy show, and just get that out of the way so I wouldn't have to go do it at like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? Like,
man, that's what people don't understand, the dedication to do this. There's a point where some people are blessed and they're lucky that they don't have to go through this. But for the majority of us, we gotta like go through some strenuous conditions make some real like dramatical decisions in order for us to achieve any success to what we want to do as being a comedian. And people don't realize that. Like they think it's just, oh, you just go up and you just go and be funny and then you get paid. And it's like, no, man. Like we gotta work these jobs, and these jobs they don't. 99% of the time they don't support comedy. You're lucky. Like I was fortunate to get laid off, then get the bus job, then quit that, and to be able to still work a job and manage some of my bills, but still was homeless. Like, and then to have other things add up, you know, doing extra work, and then I got SAG, and I got union, then I got a cartoon, then I got the movie, and then blah blah blah, and I started building little by little. But people don't understand like what it takes to really, really do comedy.
And that's it. That just when you were saying that, like how crazy it is, because I can actually see. I was never homeless, but like for the fact that you're still in this city homeless, but you still have bills.
Yes.
That's, man, fucking insane. Only in Los Angeles.
You're homeless and you got bills.
Yeah. I didn't even have an apartment. I had car insurance, credit card, cell phone. You gotta have your cell phone.
My mother
was like, if you don't pay your insurance, at least pay your cell phone so I can talk to you.
Exactly.
It's important.
So they can book you.
Yes.
How can they book you if they can't call you?
Yes. And thank God for Facebook, because that really helped you.
It did.
They could contact you and, hey. All
right, guys.
But wait. I want to ask Doc a question.
Okay, go ahead.
I want to ask you a question. So we've been talking about the struggle in Los Angeles, especially with comedy. You've given us some great stories about how you started off in Detroit cleaning banks, and then working as a bus driver, and then making your way to the Comedy Store and getting spots and getting some TV credits. So now that we're talking about the struggle, let me ask you, all that stuff's in the past. What is your game plan now? What's your path from everything that you learned doing all that stuff? What is your path going forward right now in terms of comedy?
Same as the beginning, to truly make a living at doing this. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Dave Chappelle's father asked him, when Dave told him he wanted to be a comedian, and his father was like, man, he said, do you think you can make it? And his father, and then he looked at his father and he said, well, that depends on what you consider making it. He said, if I make just as much as what you're making as being a teacher, then I consider that making it. And then the father was like, well, hell, if you think like that, then just make sure you name your price when you get there. So that's the game. The game is just to be able to get to a point as a stand-up comic and truly make a living at this. A living is after you didn't book your hotel, you didn't took your flight, you didn't did your shows, and you're making profits after that.
Yeah, you're coming home with more money.
Anything after that is a bonus.
It's just like any job. What is your profit?
Yes.
After your overhead, what's your profit?
Yes. And people don't understand that. They think, well, you just got to be funny. It's like, no, y'all don't get it. Like, especially today's day, with the expansion of cable stations, more TV stations, the internet, everything's spread out so much that even though there's more opportunities in those areas, but there's still a struggle as far as a stand-up trying to get things going, because they're going, oh, well, you're not the hot guy on Instagram, or you're not the hot guy in this show or this movie. Yeah. So it's, and they're paying less. They're paying less than what, from when I worked at the Comedy Store, where they told me they was making, I'm like, what the fuck? In the 90s and 80s, I'm like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Like, you're talking features.
Yeah.
Now features are getting $500, but that's not including airfare and room and board. And you're like, what?
Features used to make more money.
Yes. And they used to have room and board for them. Yeah. So now it's a whole nother.
It's the opposite for, like, most jobs, you know, minimum wage increases. But for comics, we actually make less money now.
And for those
you used
to
make a living as a feature comic.
Yeah.
You could live your life always being a feature comic.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, for comedy, there are generally three positions. Host, feature, headliner, right? So hosts don't make no money because they don't even get room and board, and they may get $300 to host.
That's just, typically the host. That's just stage time for them.
Yeah, that's just stage time to grow.
The host is a local comic.
Yeah. And then the feature, the guy who...
And today, by the way, the host makes $50 a show. So for a weekend...
Yeah, you get like $300 shows, if you do six, you're doing five, 250. Six. Yeah, you get $250 to $300.
You're $250 for the weekend.
Yes. So it's... The host makes nothing. So now you go to the feature. Feature is only $50 more. So now the feature...
Feature's making $100 a show.
$500. And that's... You better hope they pay for your room and your transportation.
Exactly. So that you can come home with all $500.
Yeah, and people don't get it.
I'm fortunate enough that, like, I opened for Joey, who's a very generous person, and he takes care of my room and board, and
those are the guys.
Fucking airline.
And that's the double.
Sometimes he'll throw me extra money on top of what the club.
That's the greatest thing about opening for bigger names, because they go, you know what? Yeah, the club gonna pay you $500. But I'm gonna throw you an extra $500 or extra $700 or even $1,000
because they've been there.
They already know, and they see
what you're going through. And
once you become a headlining comic, I didn't even say headlining because there are headlining comics that's not making a lot of money. I'm talking about when you can command the door, and you get the ticket prices of whatever people pay, like, and you start selling out venue. Man, it's a whole nother level. And you can go, I can pay these people off because I made $70,000. People don't understand. Hey, out there, listen to this. People make anywhere from $20,000. I'm talking about the guys that collect the door that sell out. They make anywhere from $20,000 to $100,000+ every weekend. And that's just not the superstars, not the Kevin Hart. You know Kevin Hart make close to $1 million a weekend. It's insane.
No, $20,000 a weekend is like Joe Coy,
yeah. He make more than that.
Maybe now. Maybe 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah, 5 years ago.
And how many weekends a year is that?
Some guys, they like to work 3 weekends, 4 weekends out of the month. But a lot of guys, they go like, you know what? We're happy making enough money weekends out of the month.
I mean, that's over $100,000 a year.
I've worked for a lot of guys that are cheap as fuck. And when you go on the road with them, they won't even so much as fucking buy you a fucking sandwich.
Beer, yeah.
And then I was just recently in Salt Lake City, Utah, opening for Joey Diaz, right?
Yeah.
And I sat there, and for him, I actually fight to try to take the bill because he's given me so much over the years. So him and I were on the road. We go out to lunch together and fucking breakfast and dinner.
That's cool, though. Yeah.
And we always go, and I always go like, come on, let me try to get the card or something like that. And then Joey never lets me, but this last time we were in Salt Lake City, Utah, and Joey looked at me, and he goes, I'm going to tell you what Joe Rogan told me when I was opening for him. I'm like, okay. And Joey goes, he goes, just like that scene in The Godfather. Not The Godfather, The Sopranos. I never watched The Sopranos. Like, I always mean to fucking watch The Sopranos.
I just watched that the last couple of years ago.
Really? Okay, so he goes, it's just like that scene in The Sopranos when the son-in-law tries to pay, and the dad goes like, no, I fucking pay. But when you have kids of your own, you'll fucking pay, right?
Yeah.
So Joey told me, he goes, and this is what Joe Rogan told him. He goes, you know what? I'm the headliner. You're the feature. That's the way it's supposed to fucking go. Right. When we go out to eat, I'll fucking pay for the food. Because I guess Joey tried to buy Rogan a steak dinner once and to say thank you. And Rogan said, like, fuck that. It's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
He goes, here's the deal. When we go out to eat, I fucking pay. This is what Joey told me. He goes to me. He goes, D'Agostino. He goes, when we go out to eat, I fucking pay. But you gotta make me one promise. When you're the headliner, you fucking pay and you take care of the guys that open for you.
Bobby Lee, dude. All these guys that you go out that I've been out with, from Eric Griffin to anybody, being as big as those guys. But you know, that's what they do. And Joey, he's the type of dude that, like, I've done this podcast the 2 times, right? And Joey, it's all, it, like, when he do things, it's like, okay, it's more of a, even though he says it's a us thing, but he try to really make it more about you.
Yeah.
Because he wants you to benefit from whatever. So when Joey do take you out on the road, Joey don't mess around. His thing is, it's like, no. This is for you to prosper. This is for you to get stage time. Yeah. This is where you don't have to worry about money right now. You don't worry about money because I'm doing it. And that's what Rogan passed on to him. So it's interesting. It's interesting. Even like when I go with Greg Fitzsimmons, I go and I, once in a while, I host for Greg Fitzsimmons, right? And he does that. Even I'm the host. Mm-hmm. And Greg will be like, you know what, Doc? This, I'm going to do this and I'm going to take care of this. And don't worry about that. Greg will come to me after the show and he'll slide me something extra.
Yeah.
He'd be like, Doc, I know this, they paying you this, but this is what I want you to have.
Yeah, it's just because, solid, dude. They know as a comic what it takes to make a fucking living. When the comedy clubs just go, hey, we pay 50. Sorry, that's what we pay. We pay 50 a spot. But the comics, they go like, I know what it's what it takes to make a living in this. So they'll give you they'll make up the rest. All right, guys, we got to get the fuck out of here. But I want to ask you both a fucking question before we go, because this is like the fucking day jobs topic. I'm not even going to say have you. I'll change it to what have you stolen from jobs?
Oh man! Right, Kevin, off the bat, I'll go like right from that cleaning job that we were talking about, because
we stole time.
No, it wasn't even time, man. Like a lot of those like commercial places that we go clean, like I get there in the morning and I start cleaning. All of a sudden, like I'm about to leave, I'm like, wait a second, I think we're all out of toilet paper. And I go into the supplies closet. And I would take like 4 or 5 rolls of toilet paper. I would take some paper towels.
What else?
I'm trying to think of anything else from the other jobs. No, I mean, mainly it was from cleaning. I'm not going to lie. I took my fair share amount of weed.
Like, from who?
In the Black Eyed Peas studio.
Oh, fuck. They from the client.
No, because they told me before. They told me before, I was like, yo, man, anything you find is because, like, Will I Am was very strict. It's like, every time you come in here, I want everything clean. Like, I don't care if there's, like drugs or anything. Like, you just fucking throw it away if they leave it out. I don't care. Yeah. And so I'd be like, here's a nice couple of rolled joints. There's a fucking eighth, and there's nobody there. And he wanted thrown away because he would have kids coming the next day to record vocals on something.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, here's a free.
That's some good weed. The next day, Kevin's writing songs and shit.
That is a non-appreciation for good weed. That's what I don't like.
Exactly.
Doc, what did you?
I'm gonna be honest with you, Augustino.
Just keep it to like something that's like most memorable that you stole.
And it's not even that drastic. It's
that's okay.
I stole the oil filter from the dealership. Like,
and you put it on your own car?
Because I was
like, man, they got thousands, and I'm like.
All I need is one for like 3 months.
Just like, man, y'all tripping if y'all get mad at me. If they would have pulled me to the office, I would have quit. I would have been like, y'all making millions.
Would you install it yourself?
Huh?
Would you install it yourself?
No. I wouldn't. I'm not a mechanic. I could have. It's easy.
So who did it?
The mechanic. So what I would do.
So you stole it and then took it back?
I took it. What I would do, I would steal it. I did it one time. I stole it. I took it to the mechanic and I was like, here's my filter. And he was like, yeah, well. And because that was me and the mechanics, like low key thing.
Oh,
like,
I got
me and him, we both were like, man, we need to make some money outside the dealership. So he was like, look, you bring me the filter, I get you the oil. Don't worry about it.
Oh, wow.
So like, I stole the oil and the filter because I worked in the parts department. You know
did you
saying?
Drive a Ford?
Huh? Yeah, I drove a Ford.
So they had the filter for your car.
Yeah, the filter and the oil was easy. But here's the thing, no matter what kind of car you had, they had every filter there.
Okay.
But if you drove a Ford, there were a surplus
Sure.
And so, like, to miss one filter,
they wouldn't even notice.
Yeah. So it was like,
I'm doing you a favor. You're not throwing this away. Dude, you're
I'm one of
me.
Those dudes. I don't know about y'all, but it bothers me to steal. So, like,
yeah, it does.
It bothered me until like recently. I'm just kidding. I'm fucking with you. No, bro. Like, I grew up like fucking straight hardcore Catholic family,
yeah,
man.
Right.
Yeah, I never fucking really stole until I became a comic.
I mean, it depends. It really depends on what you got to steal. Like, if you're stealing food because you're hungry, that's one thing. Like me, I was stealing toilet paper to wipe my ass. I wasn't stealing something to make
that's
money.
That's in the same ballpark.
It was cleanliness. It was cleanliness.
You don't have to steal
things.
It, though.
It was right there. Yeah. No, but the thing is, there'd be stacks and stacks and stacks
of toilet paper. It's 89 cents for four,
and like, I'm about to leave, and my roommate's texting me. He's like, yo, man, we're all out of toilet paper. You better bring some toilet paper back.
When I was a janitor, I never thought, like, I didn't care. Like, I was...
Well, see, when we were cleaning...
I had two jobs
going
out
making
money.
We would buy our own cleaning supplies most of the time.
We had to be...
So, in a way, it's like, fuck them. I'm taking the toilet paper, right? I had to buy the fucking pine saw today, so I'm taking toilet paper for my house.
Oh, wow. I guess I get that. That's the same as when I was...
Listen, bro, I could probably...
But that's like stupid stuff. That's not stuff that's worth a lot of money.
No,
You know what I mean? Like,
I don't want something that's really valuable. I want something that makes more... I want to hear your answer to something that's, like, interesting.
The only time I ever stole something valuable, I guess, was... And they weren't even at work. I stole my mother's gold necklace and gave it to a girl. Like...
Oh,
like,
Jesus,
I wanted to smash.
That's not
like,
work.
Hey, yeah, oh, that's not work. Okay, my bad.
He was giving it to a girl, though, so it's okay.
Did you ever get it back for your mom?
Nah.
The girl still got it?
I never smashed either. It was the worst decision. One of the worst decisions of my life.
You just threw your mama's gold chain just right out the window. That's basically
That'd be hilarious. Hey, his mom is pissed as fuck.
When I took it to the girl,
did you get some of these? And he's like, nah. She's like, oh, you devil grounded.
When I gave it to the girl, she was like, did you steal this? Because I didn't have it in the box or anything.
Oh my God.
It was like balled up in my hand. I was like, this for you. And she was like, where the fuck did you get this? I was like, I bought it. And she was
if it doesn't come in a box.
It was like passed down from generation.
And she said, oh, okay, thank you. And she took it.
Shit.
And I never got with her.
She
I was
still got
so
it?
Fucking, I don't know. Lily, if you out there, give me my goddamn
she
necklace
probably,
back.
She gave it to her daughter and said, one day you give this to your daughter.
Fucking, it just so...
It started the whole... All right. I mean, I'm not even going to... We're already out of time here. I'm not even going to get to the fucking, like...
Yeah, we're at an hour and 51 minutes.
I'm not gonna even going to the, I'm not even gonna get to the meat and potatoes of the fucking shit that I stole.
Oh, shit.
I'll tell you one funny one, though.
Just run it down, buddy.
I'll tell you one funny one, but there's a lot of shit where we can get... It'll just get into a deeper fucking argument. So that's another episode.
I won't comment. Go ahead.
Okay, listen. This is just one quick little one. So, like, I had this office job, and you know what a Keurig coffee maker is?
Yeah. I got one at home right now.
Yeah.
That's how I roll. Keurig, get it.
That was the dumbest question I've ever heard.
Okay, I'm sorry. So Keurigs have those little, they call cake cups, the capsule. So I like them because you can make an individual cup of coffee rather than the whole pot. You can try different things.
That's the best way.
Yeah,
it's like
one
a waste to make a whole
pot. Yeah,
a pot.
Exactly.
Who drinks a pot of coffee anyway?
Unless you're a whole household. So I had like one capsule. So they all have the capsule. So I worked at a place that in the office they had a Keurig, and then they had all these capsules, different flavors for everybody in the office. You just free for all.
So you stole coffee. That's what you're saying.
No. But here's the thing. At home, I had a regular coffee pot with the filter and shit. So I would.
What the fuck did you steal?
So I would take the K cups home.
And cut them all open.
In my favorite flavor, and I cut them all open and I poured
it. You know how many to fit? Oh my God. Dude, you're an animal.
You
want
to know how many?
Three. Three?
It takes three K-cups to make a pot of coffee, and that's good
for
fucking four cups.
All right.
Two people
like
is two cups of coffee.
I don't know why I was thinking.
But the
like
thing is, I would steal like all the different flavors, and each day you have a different flavor pot of coffee.
And nobody ever
caught
on.
You guys fucking survive in this business. It's basically the point of this episode. Yeah. Listen, Doc, thank you so much for being on.
No problem, thank you.
Hey, man.
Fun podcast, and I told you this subject.
Good subject
is so
right?
Great.
This could have been a fucking.
It just spins into so many different.
I know.
Oh,
it could be
that's what makes good conversation.
It could be a 15-hour fucking podcast if we
it
fucking got everywhere.
It was just fun to talk with Doc and just talk about the struggle in general. I mean, because that's typically the side that people don't really get to see. You know what I mean? Like the people that want to know more
fucking
about
the ugly side of this.
Yeah, the ugly side of this. Like what would you do to see your dream? Because a lot of people, you don't know how far you'd go.
That's a whole nother
subject to reach
right
your
here.
Dream. You know you what do? I mean? What would you do? Well, I mean, essentially it all is because you're doing everything that you're doing. But it's just like, mainly for the struggle, it's just like, how far do you go get a job to support what you want to do? And then what do you do when you need to leave that so you can continue to your craft?
To escalate, yeah.
It's just great to hear other people's stories about their path into success and how they see it. It was just great to talk with you, Doc.
All right, you guys. Well, I got to go do an open mic right fucking now.
I'm on the same page. You're going with me, bro. Know.
I got to go open up a burrito.
Over there, so they started at 9.
Well, come meet us after it, Kev. Right by your house. We're going to go to that fucking party.
Robin?
Yeah, we're going over there work on some new shit. Yeah, I'm going to go over there. So, couple quick shout-outs here on Twitter, at Crash Place. Thanks so much for following me. Welcome to the fucking parishioners family here.
What's up, Crash Place?
Shout out, of course, to Cleo on Twitter. It's at @talk2 Cleo.
What up, Cleo?
Thank you so much. She's been fucking supporting me since day one.
Fantastic. Oh, because she's been supporting you?
She's,
has she been giving you those K-cups?
Anybody contact me? I'm at
She's cool as hell.
Comedy on Instagram and Twitter.
She's always listening to the podcast and give me little shout outs here and there.
Oh, that's awesome.
So thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.
Doc, where can people see? What do you got coming up? Where are you going to be?
The next thing I'm doing is a West Side Comedy Theater in Santa Monica this
Sunday.
Oh,
cool. Dude, I've never even been over there. I gotta fucking go with you. I never fucking
been
over there.
Do this. Text me next time and I'll plug you in with Sarah Mello and we'll get you plugged.
Okay, cool. Is it every day or is it just Sundays?
Nah,
or?
It's every the West Side Comedy Theater, they've been doing it like every 2 weeks for the show.
Okay, well we'll talk
about
it.
We'll talk about
it. I gotta get over there soon. So when will you be there?
I'll be there you got me. Hold on.
It's all right. Anything else besides that? Like, are you on the road opening for anybody?
Nah, because I don't want to bring the room down, but I ain't going to talk about why, but I just got back into comedy for the past 2-3 months. I've been off for a while.
Okay.
And I'll tell y'all after the fact because it's so sad. But, you know,
okay.
I just getting back in and I'm back in the game.
Welcome back, man.
Yeah, thanks, bro.
It's good to see you, man.
But, you know, I got a cartoon. Like I said, it's playing one of the characters, Samuel Deshaun Randy Jackson, on a cartoon with the rapper Tyler, the Creator. It's called The Jellies on Adult Swim, so that's coming out this summer.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, got that. And,
good for you, bro.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, and I was in a movie. You got to see it from the beginning, though. Was Handsome on Netflix with Jeff Garland.
Okay.
That came out May 5th. So
it's streaming on Netflix right now?
Yeah. So you can look at that, see me
awesome.
Do my
I'm
quiz.
Go check
I'm
that
Detective
out with
Dino.
My burrito.
Go check out fucking Doc on all that stuff. And then when you like it, go let him know you watched it and you liked it and you heard him on this podcast and you like him. Where can people reach you on
there
social
you
media?
And if you want to reach me at Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, it's Doc Willis Comedy. On Facebook, it's Doc Willis. So either
Doc
one.
Doc Willis Comedy.
You got it.
Doc Willis.
W-I-L-L-I-S. Get
I
it.
I
want
to thank Doc Willis for fucking being our guest today. And,
thank you, Doc.
My co-host, Kevin Lyons.
I'll meet you today, Kevin.
For helping me out. We had some fucking good times here, didn't we,
every
brother?
Time. That's how
it's
we get it.
It's always good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too.
It's good to know you live so fucking close, bro.
Yeah, right around the corner from me.
Let's go do this fucking open mic real quick. Sponsor time. Might as well give a shout out to fucking TooHighMcFly.com. Right, Kevin? Guys, go to TooHighMcFly.com.
And our YouTube page.
And go on YouTube. It's TooHighMcFly, right?
What is TooHighMcFly? What is it exactly?
T-O-O. It's my production group with me, my buddy Anton, and Daniel. And we basically do our own short films and movie reviews. And we're right now. All summer long, we've been busting out these 3 short films that we're doing. So, and we're gonna have a big premiere this fall when they're all edited and stuff, and hopefully be able to get to film our first feature in 2018. That's what we're
doing. Lessons on that, man.
There's there's shorts, there's sketches, there's movie reviews. Some of them, me and Kevin reviewing old movies and upcoming movies.
That's on the rocks. That's
called THM on the rocks. THM for Too High McFly. So it's TooHighMcFly.com, and on YouTube, go search Too High McFly. It's the channel, and watch some of the movie reviews that Kevin and I did, and just some really funny sketches on there, and be on the lookout for some upcoming short films. And also, one more time, Thank you to our sponsor, BenefitPackages.com. Guys, insurance.
Benefit package!
Insurance doesn't have to be so difficult.
Is it Benefit Packages or Benefit Packages?
It's Benefit Singular, Packages Plural, BenefitPackages.com.
Okay.
Like I said, insurance does not have to be as difficult. In the back of your mind, you know you got to go get it. But you keep telling yourself like it's too hard, so you don't even know where to start. Just let them do it. It doesn't charge you anything. You're not going to talk to a robot. Just call 1-800-356-3615 and tell them that Parishioners Podcast sent you. You're going to get free service. You'll get hooked up with insurance. If there's a way for them to help you, they'll help you. And that's pretty much it, you guys. Just tell them Parishioners Podcast sent you. Then on top of it, you're going to get 2 free movie tickets or a water bottle when you go hiking to keep your fruit raw fresh and stuff. Guys, thanks so much for listening. And we will catch you next time.
You got it.
Hey, later, Doc.
You got it. Kev and Augustina.
Soft and sweet in the love.